hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can.
Listen for your chance to win.
Then call the RIP request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the RIP Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the RIP all day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101. The RIP.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Bill Clinton proving one more time he'll talk to anybody for a crumb of attention as he talked to us again.
What about Jennifer Flowers? I mean, do you regret lying about her on 60 Minutes?
No, I don't. I don't think so. No.
Well, why not?
Because I wanted to get elected, and I just felt like if the nation's first big exposure to me was hearing about me spanking a big strange ass, yanking on a handful of her blonde hair, or staring at the tattoo on the top of her head, I don't think I would have been elected. And I just felt the battle for the direction of this country was more important.
What tattoo on the top of Jennifer Flowers' head?
It says, let go of my ears, I know what I'm doing.
Surely. Well, that just reminded me, on Oprah, you sounded like you really felt bad for Monica and everything she went through.
Well, as I said, they plunked that monster down in a hotel room, grilled her, then they were going to wire her big old sloppy, ever-expanded and I just felt terrible about that. I mean, bad for flag.
Person farthest away from Detroit here in the United States. But a shout out to Skyler listening in Paris, France. He says he's listening on radiopower.org. You can also, of course, many of you are, WRIF.com. That's the radio station I'm broadcasting from, WRIF in Detroit. Well, I don't know how. I sent email out to people, by the way, on my list. And if you want to get on my mailing list, call talkyes@yahoo.com. And it's also the place for making comments during the show. It's important, a couple of things. One, that they be fairly short. If they're real long, and I know a lot of you have a lot to say, I can't possibly read them. I can't read them all anyway. I mean, there's just so many. But if you want to get on the mailing list, you can also say that. Put me on your mailing list. Call talkyes@yahoo.com. Anyways, I sent out a mailing this week to people that are on it, and I said we'd be talking about the Democratic Convention. And I was thinking about it. I actually didn't see much of it. I was at the Post Bar, downing a few. That's in Ferndale, close to 9 Mile Road on Woodward. And there was a, what was it called? Democratic Convention Viewing Party put on by the local Democratic Party. And I started watching some of them and went, man, this is an infomercial. And I didn't say that in the most disparaging way. Not that I think that the Republican one is going to be any better. In fact, I'm sure it's going to be just hideous. If you think that, imagine that. Here are these people that now the 911 Commission has assessed as being responsible for not understanding the threat to the United States and allowing this catastrophic event to occur. And they're going to have this in New York City. I mean, virtually on the bones of the victims of what they were inattentive to. That they were inattentive to? Is that right? Or attentive to? I don't know. In other words, they missed it. All the signs were there. They went off, you know, Bush went off on vacation, you know, all that stuff. Anyways, there goes both going to be infomercials for the undecided. I mean, most people that are going to vote or even aren't going to vote, I wonder how many people are going to vote. Usually, we're lucky if over 50% of the people even bother to go out and vote. I mean, so when you get a winner, they've been maybe elected by 24% of the American people of voting age. So you have to have a strategy, these parties do. How are you going to talk to those people? How are you going to move these small percentages of people? In this case, the undecided. Well, they say it's like 4%. So probably $500 million is going to be spent on these endless commercials and every other deal that they can pull out of their hats in order to convince this 4% that they ought to pull the lever for one candidate or the other. We're going to have to suffer through it because the vast majority of people have already made up their minds. Although, who knows what little tricks or unforeseen events will come along. Well, one of the things that occurred is Bill O'Reilly had a debate with Michael Moore. I do I have to tell who those people were? I don't think so. O'Reilly, the O'Reilly Factor on Foxhole News, and Michael Moore, director of Fahrenheit 9/11. Now, all the conservatives are crowing, by the way. They said, Michael Moore's film is only, it's going to be out of the top 10 soon. It's only number 9. And this is an amazing feat. Over $100 million, about $120 million worldwide for this film, for a documentary, an amazing record. I mean, Michael Moore has enunciated the debate that the Democrats should have. There wouldn't even have been a Fahrenheit 9/11 if there had been an opposition party in this country. So now it's left to Michael Moore, and so we have these debates on television. This is really becoming the society, the spectacle. So we just watch all this stuff on television. We're not actors. We're just passive receptors of whatever we're being fed. You know, some of us think we're being fed good stuff. Some of us think we're being fed bad stuff. The problem is we're all just being fed, you know, sort of like those geese, you know, that they shove those tubes down their throat and feed them so that they'll have these engorged livers so they can make pate or some other such crap. Anyways, boy, I'm never going anywhere where I think I'm. Anyways, so you have O'Reilly versus Moore, and they're talking about is Bush a liar or not, or did he just make a mistake about the weapons of mass destruction? And it really was disquieting to me, and I wasn't quite sure. Then I heard not a debate, really. In fact, the O'Reilly and Moore was set up as kind of a mini debate. But then I heard this exchange on Al Franken's program on Air America between him and Sean Hannity. And Franken refers to him as one of the major liars in his book. What is that? Lying Liars and the Lying Liars Who Tell the Lies, or whatever it is. That one. In the middle of it, I just turned it off. And I was saying, why is this so, oh, I don't know, what would you say? And not displeasing, but why isn't this really addressing the issues? And then it occurred to me is that no one gets a word in edgewise. It's television. It's everybody gets a sentence and a half in, and then the other person butts in. And that's supposed to be what people want to see. So as soon as someone gets a sentence and a half into things, then you say, but wait a minute, what about, and you're not letting me finish, and on like that. So there's absolutely no continuity. A couple of people, I shouldn't say a couple, I would say a couple dozen people over the last year and a half or so have said that I ought to have a debate with our morning crew, Drew and Mike, who are kind of all over the board in their politics. They started off being real pro-Bush and pro-war, and then when all of this started to fall apart, they changed somewhat. I don't get to hear them very much, so I don't, I can't really judge where they're at. Now, I know they've had Craig Unger on. Craig Unger wrote the book that's featured in the Michael Moore film that's called House of Bush, House of Saud, and which shows the connections between the Saudis and the Bush family, the Carlyle Group, and what have you. Anyway, I would have a debate with them, but I would have a debate in a way that nobody would probably find interesting. That is the old-fashioned way. Remember that? You know, I'd get 20 minutes, then they'd get 20 minutes, then I get 10 minutes rebuttal, and then they get 10 minutes rebuttal, and then the audience gets to ask questions. Oh, that wouldn't be any funner. Be very interesting, would it? What people would like to hear would people would say, you hippie wormy! And I'd say, you far right-wing creeps! Yeah, that's entertainment. Neil Postman, probably heard me mention this book before. He has a book, well, God, book's 20 years old, called Amusing Ourselves to Death, Political Discourse in the Age of Entertainment. It's kind of all in the title right there. And how the idea that we actually come to grips with concepts, with policy, with laws, with a philosophy of government has been replaced by, he's a flip-flopper. Yeah, that kind of thing. I don't know how many of you knew that Liberal Palooza was happening. This was put together by Jeff at Detroit Rock City. And Detroit Rock City is in Warren. It's a guitar store, music store, and what have you. And they were having bands, and they were supposed to have people like me and Tony Trupiano speak. And they got raided last night. So this is Liberal Palooza gets busted. Jeff gets hauled away in handcuffs, and he's going to call in a little later and talk to us about that. All right, 313-298-WRIF. There is another alert, this time almost up to the highest, an orange alert. Federal government warned Sunday of possible terrorist attacks against iconic financial institutions in New York City, Washington, and Newark, New Jersey. Man, these guys are using big words. Iconic, not ironic. Not with a sense of irony, but iconic. These are icons, what would you call, major symbols of our culture and financial structure and all that. So here we go again. I don't understand, does anyone understand the real function, or the real function is something totally different. Does anyone understand the ostensible function of this? In other words, what it's supposed to be. Supposed to be that we're supposed to be notified that something could be happening. Now, we've heard this. How many times before? How many times before has this happened? We had to be on the lookout for bridges being attacked, and then apartment buildings, and another time it was banks again, and all of this. And it always turned out to be zero. And it was always because what they call chatter on the Internet. Chatter on the Internet. What the hell does that mean? They've intercepted messages? Why is that chatter? Or it's somehow this, I get, you know, that it's this racist portrayal. Because whenever the, quote, enemy has a foreign language, the language is often belittled. I mean, during the Second World War, both Japanese and German was belittled. Japanese, the language, mostly belittled because it was of a people of color. So same thing here. Just imagine people hearing this. You know, they just imagine this, how they characterize this beautiful language of Arabic as, you know, reduced down to chatter. The government said the new intelligence indicated the meticulous planning of al-Qaeda. And, well, we can rest assured that it's not going to be chemical or biological attack or a radiological dirty bomb, but it could be explosives like a car bomb or something like that. So they have designated specific buildings, Citigroup buildings in the New York Stock Exchange in New York, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank in Washington, Prudential Financial in Northern New Jersey. What about the Fifth Third or whatever? Isn't there some bank around here now called the Fifth Third Bank? What the hell does that mean? Doesn't make a bit of sense. Anyways, so this is the kind of thing they want to alert us, but and we should be, what is the word, vigilant. We should be vigilant, but go about our business. So what are we supposed to do? This never made a bit of sense. If this is all really true, there may be, I have no idea. I have no idea. It's always, so far, it's been the boy that's cried wolf. But, and so we don't even pay any attention to it anymore. It's almost like stuff for the late night comics and all that. But here is, they tell us, got to be vigilant, but go about your business. Well, how are we vigilant? Well, here comes a truck, and it's pulling up to a building, and it's exploding. I mean, you know, it's not like, if you hear what's going on in Iraq with car bombs, you know that people are going about their business, and they probably are being vigilant because this kind of stuff happens all the time, and they get blown to smithereens. So this obviously is designed to increase fear in us. This is the Republicans trying to create an atmosphere of fear, which they hope will take those 4% of undecided and vote for the strong man. Forget about it that he was AWOL and all that. He looks strong. Remember he flew in to the USS Lincoln? Of course, he did say mission accomplished. All right. Well, in this little pack of papers that I have bound together with a paperclip, you can all, in fact, you could almost just do the headlines. So, U.S. warns of threat to financial icons. What is below this? Newsweek poll, Democratic Convention 2004, Kerry Edwards leads Bush-Cheney 52-44%. Dems receive two-point margin bounce in two-way race, four-point bounce in three-way race. 58% dissatisfied with the direction of the country. Remember, there's only a third of the people, the fascist right, the people that if they declared martial law here and put, say, Middle Eastern people in concentration camps, they'd say, that's good, we have to do it to protect our democracy. And shut down all the critical newspapers and stop broadcasts like that. So the whole, you know, at least one third. So now if it's 58%, so we've got maybe 6% of the people that are on the margin of that group. And everyone else with any sense knows that this country is going in an awful direction. 57% say war with Iraq has not made the U.S. safer. Of course not. It's just PO'd people all the more. And if there is people plotting to do great harm to us, in fact, I'm sure there probably is, one of the reasons is this illegal, unnecessary war against Iraq. Well, what's going to happen to the economy? You know, Bushko is out there saying, oh, the country is doing wonderful. And what are his three things? Jobs, the economy, schools, and our security. Now, are we secure? Are we more secure? Well, the 911 Commission didn't seem to think so. But here, data, well, the headline makes no sense. But Wall Street may react nervously this week to government warnings that Al-Qaeda is targeting the New York Stock Exchange and other financial institutions for attack, possibly overshadowing key jobs data. The key jobs data is that there's not going to be any significant job growth. That's going to come out next Friday. So they're trying to cut that off at the pass. This is going to be the reason we're not doing so well is because Al-Qaeda is making these threats and all of that. Signs of the economic recovery grew a bit sluggish this summer, have weighed on investor sentiment the past month, helping send major market gauges back towards their lowest level of the year. Well, the economy and jobs doesn't sound too good for Bushko, does it? All right. Whew. This just tires me out. I mean, I don't mean doing this job or assembling this information. How to combat this stream of lies and dis and misinformation coming out of Bushko. And the idea that we could conceivably have this for another 4 years, I just don't even know what to say. I'd probably make everybody happy on, that voted for Bush and just quit or something like that. I mean, if the American people can be fooled, you know, my favorite dictum, you can fool all the people some of the time. That was, for a while, Bushko. You can fool some of the people all the time. That's that third core of the, the Republican right. But you can't fool all the people all the time. And that's where we are. So Bushko is in a real jam. What are they going to do? Well, they got all their stuff out, like I said earlier. Kerry's a flip-flopper and, what was Bush saying in Grand Rapids? These are the real people, not the people in Hollywood. What does that mean? What does that mean? I thought everybody loved Hollywood stars. Suddenly, when they have a political stance, the phrase is so dumb that it has no meaning whatsoever. The people of Grand Rapids are the real people of this country, not the people of Hollywood. What does that mean? Well, they're trying to link Kerry to what they call limousine liberals. You never see in the corporate media much mention of Kerry and his wife without talking. They're billionaires. They got all this money. They hobnob with the elite, the hoi polloi, all of that. I mean, who is Bush? Some working class guy? I mean, he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He was born on third base and thinks he hit a triple. I mean, he never had to pay the consequences of any of the mistakes that he ever made, including September 11th and including the Iraq War, unless he's defeated November 2nd. Tom Hayden, the California state legislator, said this election is going to be a referendum. It's going to be a referendum on the war. All right. I'm thinking here, because this next thing has like a ton of stuff connected with it. The next subject, but let's do some phones. Call in talk show 313-298-WRIF. Let's take our first caller. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. This is Peter Werby. Hi,
Peter. How you doing? My name's Tim.
Hi, Tim.
I'm calling. I work for the John Kerry campaign.
Sure.
And I'm calling to complain about the ignorance of George Bush's supporters. I live here up here in Port Huron, and I was out campaigning recently for the last like 3 weeks, just hard campaigning to just the people in town. And I bring up the facts, the things that you had just spoke about, with Bush and the lies he's told, the economy, education, all have suffered under the Bush regime, and they just don't seem to listen. They don't. I mean, I have the facts, Fahrenheit 9/11 aside, I think if people know who they're going to vote for, Fahrenheit 9/11 did not change their mind. And if they were Republicans going in to see that movie, I think maybe it could have changed their mind.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, you might say, I've had someone say to me, would you go see some conservative film put together by Sean Hannity? And I'd say, why would I do that? I mean, Michael Moore's views in 9/11 haven't been put forth in a mass way anywhere. All of George Bush's ideas and his policies and his views and his statements are all over everywhere, as are all conservative ideas.
Right. Right.
This is why Fahrenheit has hit such a nerve in people. This is finally... Half the people of the United States' views are finally getting a public airing, and they haven't up until now.
I mean, look at how much the film's made too. So obviously, it's going to do something to somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, $109 million isn't. I mean, for a documentary, well, if it is even a documentary, is you know, that's a lot of money in
sure.
Hollywood.
You got to remember, Tim, is that there is this. Category of the authoritarian personality. They love the leader. They can see. I mean, people loved Stalin. People loved Hitler in you know, their respective countries. People loved Mao. And it was being able to submerge themselves between the big beneath the Big Daddy figure. I mean, Big Daddy. You know, particularly here on WRIF, is kind of, you know, hey, Big Daddy, you know. But I've always said that 1984 shouldn't have been Big Brother, but should have been Big Father.
Right.
And that's what these people, even some are very tough. You know, they got big trucks, and they got NRA stickers, and they do all this manly stuff like hunt and all that. I'm not putting everybody in this, you know, in this category, but it's very typical of that. They're very angry. They train in martial arts, and they're just scared. Underneath it all, they're just these little kids that are hoping daddy will take care of them and not punish them, too.
They're like little sheep. They're told what to do.
Sheeple is a good term. Well, thank you, Tim. I appreciate your call. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Peter. It's Mr. Positive from everywhere.
Okay, hey.
Hey. I got to articulate on a couple of things. Number one, the greatest black economist.
Are you with me?
Pardon?
I just wondered whether you are with me.
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. 75% Thomas Sowell said that the countries and United Nations were for, you know, checking to see if Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, number one. Number two, I think it's ludicrous to say either the Republicans or the Democrats exactly know behind the scenes what's going on, and people can articulate a position as to whether people have weapons of mass destruction, or how we go about the itinerary to find out. I mean,
what?
Don't you think it would jeopardize if we actually knew exactly what the government, whether it be a Democrat or a Republican, to put out there and say, this is what we want to do? Don't you think it would give a heads up to the enemy? When I hear people...
Wait, I'm not sure what you're saying. I mean, we wanted to find out from Iraq whether they had weapons of mass destruction. It didn't make any sense that they did, and nobody other than people that were slavishly following the administration, which means the whole corporate media, had any belief that they did. And of course, when they communicated that through the medium of the mass media, that's weird. But people that weren't paying a lot of attention, which is most people, believed that they did because they had pictures and graphs and they had statements from defectors and all of that. But then they let the UN inspectors in. That was supposed to do the job. And it was pretty clear they weren't finding anything, and it was clear to anybody with half a brain that they weren't going to find anything. So Bush preempted the search, knowing that they weren't going to find anything. That's why one of the reasons I would say that he lied rather than was mistaken, before that they could find that there weren't any. What in the world Tony Blair and George Bush thought was going to happen when it was discovered that, gee, they were wrong and all these thousands of people, including American and British troops, are dead? I don't know. Maybe they think that we're just such absolute dummies that they can do and say anything, and that our memory is about 7 days long. Thank you, Mr. Positive. I appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. It's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Pete, how you doing?
Doing well.
I'm listening to your show every Sunday. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Okay. I just had one question to ask, and I think about it all the time. Whether it be a Republican or a Democrat in office, has it ever changed your life in any way? I mean, has it benefited you?
I think that's an excellent question. Look, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but you've got this terrible connection, and it's sounding bad. I will answer that. I think it's an excellent question. He said, essentially, has your life changed at all with there being a Republican or a Democrat in office? And I think I can say his name because he's actually the guy that hired me into radio. He's head of the Specs Howard School of Broadcast. He's the dean of Detroit radio broadcasters. And there's hundreds and hundreds of broadcasters in Detroit that owe our careers to him. Dick Kernan, old pal of mine. His brother said essentially the same thing. Dick was telling me that. Dick, rabidly anti-Bush. Hope I can say that, Dick, if you're listening. But he said his brother said, I've voted for Republicans, I've voted for Democrats, and nothing in my life has changed. Now, to some extent, that's true about me as well, because I'm white, and I'm middle class, and I'm a man. And in fact, since many of you know, I worked the second job with the IE America Radio Network, the late, not great IE America Radio Network, plus working here, I made more money. I've made more money during the Bush administration than I ever had my entire life. Now I'm back to where I was before that, just kind of getting by. And also the tax cut. The tax cut actually helped me because this is, you know, people in the upper brackets. I mean, I'm not making hundreds of thousands or anything like that, but I'm up there in a bracket for at least 3 years that I benefited. And I mean, like Clinton was talking about at the convention, he said that he's a millionaire now, and that that the tax break really helped people like him. Of course, they had to give up a lot of stuff. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. There are a lot of similarities, particularly in foreign policy, between the Republicans and the Democrats, and even between Bush and his extreme foreign policy and what Kerry has said. But nowhere in the terms of the unilateralism of abrogating all these treaties. But Noam Chomsky said, there's not a lot of difference between the parties. There is in the people in the party. And people in the party, there's a world of difference, particularly the kind of personalities that inhabit each one. But he said the parties themselves, the politicians, the instrument of the parties, there's not a lot of difference. He said, but those little differences really affect people considerably. Let me see. Yeah. Coming up at 1 a.m. Eastern Time, I'm going to be interviewing somebody who came back from the Bangkok AIDS conference. Bush didn't allow a lot of this, Bush administration didn't allow a lot of the scientists who wanted to go to attend even, and instead sent somebody from the National AIDS Commission, a guy who is a lobbyist for the big pharmaceutical companies, and the main thing he tried to do at the conference was to inhibit the ability to get generic antiretroviral drugs to people, the tens of millions of people that are suffering from AIDS all over the world. 46 million people may be infected with AIDS and growing, including growing geometrically. Generic drugs for AIDS would make up, it would be like 38 cents a day. And this is what the big pharmaceuticals are trying to stop. They don't care how many millions of people are going to die. And this kind of policy would not be carried out by a Clinton administration, nor a Kerry administration, nor would have it been by a Gore administration. So this is one small example, and you can go on in all sorts of little areas of environmental regulation and work rules and hundreds of things. There's on my website, peterwerby.com, there is something that says 1,000 reasons to impeach, not defeat, impeach George W. Bush. And I think it's up to about 1,300 now. And it's astounding what this man and this criminal administration has done. Criminal? I'd say war in Iraq. Criminal? When you are trying to deny sick people medicine? And on and on and on like that. So there's a lot of stuff out there on the internet from the left, much of which I agree with, that compares Kerry and Bush unfavorably as being very similar. But these are little differences that are going to affect a lot of people. We have Jeff on the line, do we? Okay, Jeff from Detroit Rock City is going to tell us about his experience about trying to put together a concert and it being shut down by the Warren Police. We'll do that right when we come back.
This is the Riss Award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. You can call in at 313-298-WRIF. Peter will return with more of your calls in just a moment.
Take your family on tour and travel like a rock star. Hi, Christine Michael here for Walt Michaels RV Center in Belleville. We've all been to concerts and have been amazed at the luxury motor coaches these rock stars travel in. Well, Walt Michaels making it affordable for you and your family to travel like a rock star too. And you won't even have to get on stage. All this month, you can get out and see America in a 37-foot cross-country sports coach limited. It's a diesel pusher with double slide-outs for as low as $7.39 a month. So pull up to your next concert, football game, or NASCAR event in a luxurious motorhome from Walt Michaels RV and give everyone around you a little dose of RV envy. You'll be amazed at how affordable it is to travel like a rock star. Give us a call at 800-697-2500. We'll be looking for you.
Citizens of Michigan, now that I've fixed California's problems, let me tell you something. I want to help all of the people get a new car. So if you have a job and $199, Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford will terminate your past credit problems.
Do you have a job and you have $199? Then you could be approved at Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford. Brand new Kia Rio. Start at just $7,899. That's just $7,899. Plus, every new Kia is backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. Now, you can tell your past credit problems.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Make every mile count only at Dick Scott Kia. Michigan Avenue, a quarter mile west of I-275 in Canton. And Dick Scott Kia of Waterford. At the Summit Place Mall on Elizabeth Lake Road, just west of Telegraph. Call 866-6-KIA now.
That's 866-6-KIA-NOW.
Qualified buyers plus tax, title, and plate fees. All rebates to dealer.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. You pay only shipping and handling. Call now, have your credit card handy, and try Maxtral free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
Stick around. More Night Call with Peter Werby. Coming up next.
Every Tuesday night is bike night at Barnstormer Entertainment Complex in Whitmore Lake. Every Tuesday night you can snag an award or trophy in the Best of Bike Show. Prizes for Best of Show, Sports Class, and Bagger Class. If you're thirsty, no problem. There are specials on Molson Canadian and Canadian Light. Get great food to go with that cold beer and enjoy it inside or out on the patio. Work it all off dancing or playing volleyball or kick back and shoot some pool. Every Tuesday night is bike night at Barnstormer Entertainment Complex. 9411 East M36 in Whitmore Lake. Call 734-449-0040 for more details. Friday nights are hot, too, at Barnstormers. Come by and check out the lovely ladies competing in the Miss Hawaiian Tropics semifinals every Friday night. Sponsored by Molson, JBL, Brighton Harley-Davidson, The Courtyard Marriott in Brighton, and Extreme Detroit Magazine. Barnstormer Entertainment Complex in Whitmore Lake. 734-449-0040.
Kids, eat your vegetables.
Why?
Because they have vitamins that are good for you. Kids, go outside and play.
Why?
Because fresh air is good for you.
Parents are always telling kids why something's good for them.
Kids, time for bed.
Why?
Because sleeping is good for you.
So don't be surprised when they start telling you.
Mom, don't smoke anymore.
Why?
Because it's not good for us.
Protect your children from secondhand smoke. If you or someone you know smokes, ask them to take it outside. Secondhand smoke can cause bronchitis, pneumonia, ear infections, and asthma in children. So if you're a smoker, don't smoke around people you love. Better yet, quit. Just call 1-800-537-5666 for more information. That's 1-800-537-5666. A message from the Michigan Department of Community Health and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters.
This is NICO. The Risk Podium Talk Show. Now, here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. And I guess half our stream is down. Just received a message from Ben Birch, who is the webmaster of WhiteRoseSociety.org. You can get all the archives there of my show. And so we're streaming through radiopower.org, radiopower.org. Shelby, thank you as usual. And this show is rebroadcast tomorrow on radiopower.org as well, so if you missed that. So I don't know what to tell you. I guess if you're used to doing it through WRIF.com, you just ain't going to do it. All we get is a lot of code, right? How weird. We'll show that to our web people. All right, Liberal Palooza was put together by Jeff, and Jeff runs Detroit Rock City, and it's over on Van Dyke, 23150 Van Dyke. And what he put together was a series of concerts. There was one last month and on Saturday. I was supposed to speak. Didn't make it for some reasons which, I don't know, maybe we won't even talk about. But there's a couple more coming as well, supposedly, which I will be at. But there were some real problems. Let's bring Jeff on the air. Hi, Jeff. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Good. So there you were, rocking against Bush. You had a F. Bush T-shirt on. It was a Bush Bash event. All was going along just swell, and then what happened?
Well, there was some issues with the parking lot. We don't own the parking lot behind us, and it's very difficult to keep people from parking out there because it's the obvious place to park. And, you know, we were doing the best we could, and the owners were complaining a couple times, and we'd straighten it out, and next thing you know, Pants Devastators on. We're like in the middle of their set, the last band, and the cops come up, and they say, I'm standing on the back of my property, and they just say, shut it down now. And me thinking that I'm not doing anything illegal, I'm on private property, having a political event on my own private property, I said, no, I don't believe I have to. And they grabbed me and arrested me.
Hmm. Handcuffed you?
Handcuffed me, threw me in a car, and I barely got my keys to somebody just to shut up my business. They, you know, were arresting me with my back door wide open.
Now, where was the bands playing? In the parking lot or in the building?
In the building.
Yeah.
And they charged me with being too loud.
Disturbing the peace.
Disturbing the peace.
Yeah.
They've got another thing coming because I have signed statements from everybody in the area telling how I was not a disturbance to them whatsoever.
But who is the complainant for the disturbing the peace?
The bar.
The bar?
The bar who is right next to me, who owns the parking lot.
Oh, they said you were disturbing the peace of a bar.
Yeah,
huh.
Which makes more noise than I do.
Yeah, yeah.
So well, disturbing the peace, and they're trying to stick a liquor charge on me for selling beer. What we're doing is giving beer away and asking for a donation, a small donation, to help with continuing Liberal Palooza. And I don't see, unless something has changed, I've never heard of it being illegal to give something away and ask for a donation.
I don't know. You may have a problem there. I'm not sure whether you do. You need legal counsel. And as I wrote you, I will call you tomorrow and we can talk about some of these issues. But what does this do for Liberal Palooza? Because the next concert is coming up when?
The next concert is September 4th. We got three more to do: September 4th, October 2nd, and November 6th is going to be either the celebration or the wake.
Yeah,
and
okay.
We're going to keep going, whether we got to be BYOB or whatever. It's all for the cause. The next show is booked up. We got five great bands for the next one, and we're just going to keep going.
And you're the only one that got arrested.
Yeah.
I'm glad I wasn't there, Jeff. I would have got arrested, too. I know it.
Oh, I didn't believe I was doing anything wrong. So that's why the police, they taught me a lesson. Whether you have the right or not, when a cop tells you to tank a party, just say yes.
I guess so.
You can screw up your life for a couple hours at least.
All right. Well, we will talk tomorrow and see if we can make some sense of this, whether it makes any sense to do a different venue or what. But let's talk. And congratulations to you, though. You can go to my website, peterwerby.com, and go to the Detroit calendar. You'll see all the information about Liberal Palooza. Or your website is what?
It's anyonebutbush2004.us.
Ooh, that's a long one. Anybody but, well, go ahead and say it again.
Anyone but Bush2004.us.
All right, Jeff. We'll make it happen, and I'll come to the next one and make sure that nobody gets arrested, particularly me.
Let's hope.
All right, thank you. Keep up the good work. Appreciate it. All right, thank you. Oh, yeah, Dan Letarski is our producer and phone screener with Jay Hudson. For summer, he went on vacation, and he went to Phoenix. That was a good idea, Jay. What is it there, 111 today? He's probably listening. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. It's Peter Werby.
Hello, from Ypsilanti.
Hi.
Hey, I'm also a volunteer on the John Kerry campaign.
Uh-huh.
And today we went over to Brooklyn for the NASCAR races.
Right.
To promote John Kerry. The idea was John Kerry invading Bush's territory.
Right.
I was kind of nervous because these are people I think would be dying-the-wool Republicans. But
yeah.
I was very surprised when I went there. There was a lot of warm reception for John Kerry through people I thought that would vote for Bush. And a lot of them I asked, who did you vote for in 2000? They say Bush.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, who are you going to vote for now? They said Kerry. I think everyone has a feeling that they got duped by George Bush.
Everybody did get duped by George W. Bush. Hey, one of the things that may be way in your favor, and if you don't have this information on some of the stuff you have, particularly when you go over to a NASCAR track, is that Dale Earnhardt Jr. took his whole crew to see Fahrenheit 9/11 and then said that everyone in America should see this film.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. So that's, you know what? Think about this. Going back there every week, if there's weekly stuff, I don't know what the schedule is, and having a leaflet that has Dale Earnhardt Jr. and that quote. I mean, starting with that. I mean, think about the entree that would give you.
Absolutely. The next one we're going to, I can't remember the day off the top of my head, but it's going to be a major one with all the big racers like Dale Earnhardt Jr. We're going to have like this big John Kerry tailgating party. Well, we're going to try to organize a bunch of tailgates to support John Kerry.
Now go for it. Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, so I have good confidence that Michigan will go for Kerry this year again. Even the people who vote for Bush seem like they're voting for Kerry now. So I'm pretty hopeful that this state will go to Kerry.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call at 313-298-WRIF. Some emails coming into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. This is from last week, actually, but maybe I shouldn't even say his name because he's a guardsman. Hey, Peter, awesome job on forwarding the message for the anti-war protest. This was last week. Unfortunately, I have to stay away from such demonstrations since I'm in the Michigan Air National Guard, but hopefully there will be a big turnout. Oh, this was before what I said was a pathetic turnout. Right. Too bad you couldn't have a WRF DJ recruit some demonstrators on main broadcast time. Yeah, maybe we can get Arthur Penhala to do it. Huh. Best wishes. Keep the fight going against Bush Co. This, on a subject we haven't talked about, from Christopher at wrote to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Some quick observations about Rush Limbaugh and the recent revelations about his drug addiction. We haven't heard from this. Whatever happened to this? And has this guy actually conquered his drug addiction? All power to him if he has. He was pretty bad shape. He's quite a stoner. How do his idiotic followers rationalize the fact that for years they've been listening to someone that was stoned out of his mind while on the air? Don't conservatives generally hold that anyone on drugs can't think straight, let alone tell others how to think? Or do they now hold that if only someone was popping thousands of pills, we would all be thinking clearly like their hero? Have you spoken to any conservatives that have commented on this seeming white elephant in the minds of the Limbaugh idiot fans? Oh, I mean, they don't deal well with contradictions, Christopher. I don't know what they say about that. You know, well, you're always supporting drugs. How come you're critical of Rush? Because he's such a goddamn hypocrite. That's why. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. This is Christina.
Hi, Christina. Where are you calling from?
In Detroit.
Well, welcome to the broadcast. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you. I'm calling because the gentleman had called earlier and asked, has your life changed since, you know, if you voted Democrat or Republican?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a common sense question. I know my life has changed dramatically since Bush got into office. And I've become unemployed for 8 months. And during that time, I became homeless. And I just now am starting to get back on my feet. But what about all these people who have lost loved ones and family? What about all these people due to the economy? There's just so many things going on that it really does matter who you vote for and the person that you're getting into office, the cabinet they put in. And then you have to vote for your senators because this is a whole other issue who's really running this country. The president's one person. We also have to get around to voting for our senators.
Well, you understood what my answer was. It was somewhat like Clinton was saying, although I'm not comparing myself to him, is that I am in this privileged sector. So when things go bad in this country, being white, being middle class, being a man, I'm not the first person that feels the weight. In fact, I'm way down the list of who gets hit. I mean, we know who gets hit first.
I thought I was way down the list, but lo and behold, I got hit hard.
Yeah, yeah, right. Well, you know, on the other hand, I lost my job, my big-paying job, during the Bush administration. There you go. that wasn't his fault. That was the people running this train wreck of a network I work for.
It just seems that, you know, the whole economy has suffered, and individuals have suffered, and those with a loss of loved ones from the war, you know, we can just go down the list. I even was attending college and since have had to put that on hold just to get back on my feet. But when I was in college, my American political teacher, he is a liberal. He's always voting third party. You know, we got extra credit for getting people to register.
Hmm.
He said, and I asked him privately, you know, are you going to vote third party? And he said, I always vote third party. And I'll tell you, between you and me, we got to get Bush out of office and whatever it takes.
Hmm.
I'll vote other than third party this year just to get him out.
You know, I was just thinking, Christina, too, I mean, I wasn't being real self-centered. In fact, I have in my hand a series of stories that I'm going to comment on just as soon as you hang up that directly speaks to what you were saying. But living in this country that with these mean-spirited bigots, these warmongers and greedheads, even if I did all right during that period, it's not pleasant having a moron for a president, a pack of losers, and remember, in Bush's cabinet are these guys that lost the Senate offices that they were running for, that they were rejected by their own state, that have a far-right-wing ideology. I mean, it's not pleasant having people like that being at the head of your country. It gives it a bad context, and think about how miserable life has become since Bush has become president. He said, well, it was all 9-1-1. It was not all 9-1-1. That was pretty horrible, and people really pulled together around something pretty horrible. I mean, if there was any bright spot to it, it was the way that that people responded to that. But everything else, so we put this minority of people, I mean, Bush lost the popular vote, right? So the majority of people didn't want George Bush in, and they didn't even know that he was really like this. They didn't know he was a far right wing ideologue. He thought, you know, he's a Republican, kind of conservative. But this man has an agenda, or at least his handlers have an agenda for him. But, you know, I don't even want to let him off the hook. My wife gets mad at me whenever I keep saying what a dolt he is, because she said, that lets him off the hook. He is the president. He is the man that says yes or no to everything. He's the one that appoints the John Ashcrofts and what have you. Thank you, Christina. Here, listen up, and I'll comment on some of the things we've been talking about.
Great. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. Now, just I'm not going to – actually, I have about 10 stories, but most of it will just be headlines except for this first one. How about this? You know, they always ask, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? American income shrank 9% according to the IRS. So overall, I mean, maybe you made more money. Like, I don't know how you'd really, if you put it all together, you could say, I made more money. All right? Well, then what you have to do is you average it out against Christina, who lost her job. And what does that come down to? Well, when all is said and done, Americans' income shrank by 9% over the last couple of years. Adjusted for inflation, the income of all Americans fell by 9.2%. The unprecedented back-to-back declines in reported incomes was caused primarily, and well, this goes into too much. All right. On the other hand, next thing, White House projects the highest deficit ever. I mean, is this just okay with these people that still hold out some hope or support for Bushco? That now there's the highest deficit that the United States has ever had, and the main reason it is not because the stock market bubble burst or this is a recession. It's because of this enormous giveaway of taxes, not to the middle class, not to the working class, but to the ultra wealthy. That's who gets it. Democrats contrasted the almost $500 billion projection with the $262 billion surplus for this year that Bush projected in 2001. They said they were going to continue the surplus that Clinton had gotten. And but then he persuaded Congress. You sound like the Godfather, aren't I? Hold on. There we go. Then he persuaded Congress to approve the first of his tax cuts. The shortfall will be the third consecutive and ever-growing deficit under Bush, following four annual surpluses under Clinton. Democrats said the turnabout underscored the damage of Bush's tax cuts and his poor stewardship of the economy. So this is one of his keys, right? So we got the economy and jobs. That sucks. How about this? So then we look, what's happening? We all pay, you know, all this money in taxes and what have you. Paralyzed by a war in Iraq, this is Bob Herbert in the New York Times, that we don't know how to win or end, we're in danger of forgetting completely about the struggling cities here at home. Bill Clinton mentioned the 300,000 poor children being cut out of after-school programs and the increases in gang violence across the country. A clearer sense of the rot that's starting to reestablish itself in American cities was offered in an article from Cleveland by the Times' Fox Butterfield on Tuesday. Many cities with budget shortfalls are cutting their police forces and closing innovative law enforcement units that helped reduce crime in the 1990s. Cleveland has laid off 15% of its cops. Pittsburgh has lost a quarter of its officers. Saginaw, Michigan, a third. Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department has waved goodbye to 1,200 deputies, closed jails. Several jails, and released some inmates earlier. Bob Herbert says, this is nuts. A fireman with the Northville City Fire Department. See, some of you think, who cares about those cities? It's just filled with... Okay, that's the way some people feel. This is out in Northville. Same thing. Booking for city officers will be taken out of the city, making them unavailable for at least an hour. The police station that is now in the city and open 24 hours a day will only be open on an 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. weekly basis. Fire and police dispatch response time will be lengthened. All right? In the meantime, adult corrections populations hit a record. Who says we're not number one? Number one, we've got more people incarcerated per population and absolutely than any other country, any industrialized country in the world. One of the things that Bush brags about is schools. He's done so well. Well, I don't think too many people that are in education actually think that, particularly all the teachers that are being laid off, schools that are being closed. Now, what about middle class people? Tuition hikes hurt families in Michigan, says the Detroit News. Steady increases in fees, room, and board since the 80s pushed cost of degree over $60,000. And at MSU alone, tuition and fees surged 57% in the last 10 years, most of it in the last couple of years where they keep going with these big hikes. Now, Bush says he's creating jobs. We know that the industrial base is still leaving. Bush's friends in the big corporations are taking their jobs where they can pay people not a dollar an hour, in some cases a dollar a day. But we are creating jobs, and we are committed. Wait, I don't want to say we. Let's be real. I don't like that we. That's not quite sure who it is. The Bush administration, Bushco, is committed to creating jobs. Says so right here. Secretary of State Colin Powell, the man who got up and told all that hoorah about Iraq weapons of mass destruction. But let's say we can believe him on this one. Powell, the U.S. will help Iraq create jobs. That's right. Secretary of State Colin Powell promised Iraqi leaders Friday that the United States will speed up spending. You're wondering where your tax dollars are going and why your police stations and schools are closing, why the roads suck and all of that. Because Secretary of State Colin Powell promised Iraqi leaders Friday the United States will speed up spending to rebuild the country's infrastructure and create jobs, and said doing so will make Iraq safer. How about this? Let's get rid of Iraq in this sentence and say that, and let's substitute Michigan. Secretary of State Colin Powell promised Michigan leaders Friday that the United States government will speed up spending to rebuild the state's infrastructure and create jobs, and said doing so will help make Michigan safer. Except it's not happening like that. This is all going to Halliburton, the Carlyle Group, and Brown Root, all those corporations like that. Powell didn't announce specific figures, but they said $9 billion in U.S. reconstruction money will be dispersed by December. I'd like to call it $9 billion in U.S. taxpayer money. Well, sir, yeah, just a couple more here. Where's our money going? I mean, this is absolutely inconceivable. To Crete, Iraq. That's Saddam's hometown. Cash has become the U.S. military's first line of defense in some parts of Iraq, according to the Washington Post, where U.S. soldiers are distributing money to encourage goodwill and to counter their enemy's offer of money to unemployed Iraqis willing to attack Americans, according to officers. So they're distributing taxpayer money. That's not mentioned there. Every patrol, even patrol leaders now, carry envelopes of cash to spend in their areas. I don't, you know, maybe we shouldn't even pay taxes. Just cash your check. Get it into cash, and then just send it over to one of these patrol leaders in cash, and they'll hand it over to some Iraqis. The money comes from brigade commanders who get as much as $50,000 to $100,000 a month to distribute for local rehabilitation and emergency welfare project through the commander's emergency response program. The targets at which the cash is aimed are the restless legions of unemployed Iraqi men, many of them former soldiers, policemen, and low-level members of the Ba'ath Party of ousted President Saddam Hussein. Commanders have the go-ahead to dish out tens, hundreds, and thousands of dollars with little more paperwork than a signed receipt. And it gives some of the ideas of what they, you know, repairing people's cars and all that. For more than a year, the commander's emergency response program was funded with $105 million taken from Iraqi construction funds. But the Defense Department will begin paying for the program and has requested $300 million as part of the fiscal 2005 budget request to Congress. They're taking our money, they're taking cash, and they're handing it out to people. Why don't they do that in the big cities here? I mean, we got people in the same spot. They are so desperate, they say, I'm going to turn to crime. Well, we could just have police get millions of dollars in cash and go through the most impacted, poverty-stricken areas in our big city cities and just say, hey, come here. And they go, and the guy says, oh, no, I'm busted. They say, no, you're not busted. Here's $1,000. Hey, don't you love us? But so we're all keeping track of this? Nope. Big story here. U.S. lacks records for Iraq spending. U.S. civilian authorities in Baghdad failed to keep good track of nearly $1 billion in Iraqi money spent for reconstruction projects and can't produce records to show whether they got some services and products they paid for, according to a new audit. So they're taking our money, and we're not even don't even know if it even got where it was supposed to. The former Coalition Provisional Authority paid $200,000 for 15 police trucks without confirming that they were ever delivered, and the auditors have not located them. So we've been ripped off. And this is because Bushco is playing with our money. It's not their money. In fact, their money is going to his dad's businesses, like, you know, Carlyle Group, Cheney's business, Halliburton, and what have you. Officials also said they don't have records to justify, you ready for this, $24.7 million price tag for replacing Iraqi currency, which used to carry Saddam Hussein's portrait. Yeah, you don't want that ugly guy hanging around. So what I wonder about, if there are conservatives listening, people that support George W. Bush, they just think he's doing a bang-up job in Iraq, what do they think about this? Is this not true? I mean, is this all just made up? I fabricated it, or Associated Press fabricated it in order to make Bush look bad? So it's one of two things, if you still support Bush on this. Either it's a lie, and this was all fabricated, or it's okay with you. And I'm really curious how the American public getting ripped off to the degree we are by Bushco could be okay.
WRIF Detroit presents Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. To express your opinion, call 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
All right, here's the deal. I got too wound up with my last rave. I put in the wrong thing, so this is going to have this long music bed of, oh, my God, I got to talk for 50 seconds. And if someone said you have 50 seconds to talk, you'd say, big deal. That's pretty easy. Man, it's a long time. I'll tell you, it's WRIF in Detroit. That's our official name. We're going to talk about when we come back. You can comment all on all of this. If you're on hold, please be patient, and we will get to you. 30 seconds. Saw the Manchurian Candidate last night, Friday night, actually, the opening night. Pretty interesting, particularly since I'd seen the original, the 1962 version, just about 2 weeks ago. Talk about that a little, but hey, we'll get on to your calls as well at 313-298-WRIF. Calltalkyes at yahoo.com. That's our email. And peterwerby.com. PeterWerbe.
Hello, Albany! How's everyone feeling tonight?
Pretty good. I'm kind of sunburned.
All right! Are you ready to rock? Can't hear you! Are you ready to rock?
Rock is a little strong. I am ready to enjoy myself.
Cause once we get going, we are not gonna stop. So you better be ready to go all night!
All night? I need my 8 hours. Yeah, me too.
Rock without enthusiasm. That's like beer without taste. So this summer, celebrate 50 years of great rock by choosing the beer with more flavor than Budweiser. Miller Genuine Draft. Genuine flavor, cold filtered smooth. Miller, good call.
In a nationwide taste test, even Budweiser drinkers said Miller Genuine Draft had more flavor. Testing conducted by the Institute of Perception, Richmond, Virginia. Results reflect which beer has more flavor, not preference or smoothness. Taste for yourself. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Tycoons and BT's Avenue B, a five-star menu with Detroit's finest female entertainment. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roche, put your best face and body forward with help from Dr. Roche.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. Hey, it's late night. You're sitting there and you're thinking about your mortgage. Well, you can go to rockfinancial.com right now. That's right. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can go to rockfinancial.com, and there's a lot of reasons to visit. Find out how you can get a $200,000 loan for a lower payment than you would ever think. Also, find out about the Smart Arm. Maybe you're not going to be in your house that long, and you've got to take a look. If you're like most Americans, you might have $7,500 or more in credit card debt. Might be time to use the mortgage and consolidate that debt. No reason to have outstanding bad debt like credit card debt when you can have good debt, low interest, and tax deductible. Use your mortgage. Go to rockfinancial.com right now. You can check out the mortgage calculators. See how much home you can afford if you're thinking about a new purchase. A lot of reasons to go. So go right now, rockfinancial.com. Even though it's late, you go to rockfinancial.com. Anytime, anywhere. Evenings or weekends, you can go to rockfinancial.com, Michigan's largest mortgage company, rockfinancial.com.
Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company, an equal housing lender. Details at rockfinancial.com.
More Night Call with Peter Worthy next on The Rim.
The American badass brings it back to Detroit. Are you ready? Live, Miller Genuine Draft presents Kid Rock. He's Whiskey Bent. And he's hellbound.
Cowboy, badass,
Detroit. You demanded a third show and got it. Saturday, August 28th at BT Energy Music Theater. Tickets for the third show on sale now. Available at the Palace and DTE Energy Music Theater box offices. All Ticketmaster locations. Online at cc.com or palacenet.com. Charge at 248-645-6666. Part of the Miller Genuine Craft Concert Series. Be sure and pick up Kid Rock's new self-titled CD. If it's gonna be big and it's gonna be bad, then it's got to be Kid Rock in Detroit.
Citizens of Michigan, now that I've fixed California's problems, let me tell you something. I want to help all of the people get a new car. So if you have a job and $199, Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford will terminate your past credit problems.
Do you have a job? Do you have $199? Then you could be approved at Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford. Brand new Kia Rio. Start at just $7,899. That's just $7,899. Plus, every new Kia is backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. Now, you can tell your past credit problems.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Make every mile count only at Dick Scott Kia. Michigan Avenue, a quarter mile west of I-275 in Canton. And Dick Scott Kia of Waterford. At the Summit Place Mall on Elizabeth Lake Road, just west of Telegraph. Call 866-6-KIA now.
That's 866-6-KIA-NOW.
Qualified buyers plus tax, title, and plate fees. All rebates to dealer.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, more of your comments, questions, and opinions with your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Yeah, I do repeat myself, I guess. Steve from Taylor says, I've heard you say many times, do you think Big Brother in 1984 should have been called Big Daddy or Big Father? I've never read that book. Steve, you got to read it. But I'm wondering if Orwell may have chosen Big Brother because a father is more like a big, scary authority figure. Well, that's what Big Brother was. He was a mega big, scary authority figure. An older brother is someone who's looking out for your best interests and lending a helping hand, but he's always on your side. Big Brother just makes his him sound less intimidating. Does that make sense? When you say it, yeah, but not within the context of the book. The Big Brother was not on the side of anybody. He was, you know, like kind of like Stalin figure or something like that. All right, Dan Letarski, what... okay, I seem to have lost my sheet here, so you're going to have to help me as we go along with what phone line to take. Hi, WRIF, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Peter. This is Chuck in Waterford. How are you doing?
Doing well, Chuck. Thank you for joining us.
Okay, I just wanted to call in and talk to you a bit about my experience when Bush came through Waterford a few weeks back. I think it was one of the weeks when you weren't on the air, and it's, I was very unhappy with the situation.
Tell us.
What happened, he came in, he landed at the Oakland County Airport,
right,
which is here in Waterford, and he went directly to where the money is. Wes Bloomfield had his fundraiser and went back. Now, me, I work as a restaurant manager at a restaurant here on M59, not too far from the airport. And when he came in, they shut down the road. He went through, I know I had a few employees were late for work. A lot of people were talking about wondering why there was so much traffic jams and so on, and I heard quite a few people talking about, did you see the vans go by with the guns sticking out the window?
Yeah, I saw that downtown Detroit. That was pretty weird.
Yeah. So then again, I guess he does his fundraiser, then he's coming back and they shut the road down again. It was around 6:30, which would normally be the height of dinner time for us, and they had the road closed for a good 45 minutes. You know, no one could get in or out of the restaurant. You know, I'd say I lost at least $200 worth of business. So we end up standing up out on the roadside watching to see this thing go by. And they finally come along. They've got cop cars. They have everything blacked off so no one can get in or out of the road. Then when his motorcade comes along, they've got a military helicopter flying above the front of it. And they've got, like, squadrons of motorcycle cops that come along. And anywhere where there's somebody standing on the side of the road, a motorcycle cop comes and gets right in front of you so you can't, you know, do anything. I had one of my customers was, like, shaking out his newspaper to show he wasn't hiding a gun or anything. Then the motorcade comes along. It was this big, ugly black. It looked like a cross between a truck and a limo. Went by with smoked windows. I could see there was people inside. Somebody's like, "Oh, I thought I saw somebody waving." And then there was several more vans going by, just bristling with antennas, and a few more normal vans. And then they all packed up and went down the road. And you know, I mean, for us here, I mean, to me, it seemed like a taste of being in a police state.
Well, you know, it is so odd what has become of the top government officials. I mean, I don't know if it would be any different if Kerry came through. They have to do that. I mean, they've just become a magnet, not for terrorists, but or maybe for terrorists now as well, but just for the ordinary run-of-the-mill nuts. You know, it was odd. You think about this, how many presidents have been assassinated between 1865 and 35 years, three presidents were assassinated between 1865 and 1900, three presidents were assassinated. So, and then one, of course, in 1963. And what, Ford was shot at? Was there any others? Are we missing any others?
Well, Reagan got shot.
Oh, yeah. Hello. Yeah, Reagan. Reagan actually got shot. Wow. Who'd want that job?
Yeah, I know. That's what some of the people were commenting, that he's like a prisoner in his own world, you know?
I think so. But, yeah, those situations when the presidents come in and just on these fundraising things, no less, and they inconvenience all the ordinary people. All right, thanks for the story.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Thanks for joining us. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. How you doing today, bud?
Doing good.
Hey, I was going to talk about weapons of mass destruction, but do you mind if I talk about something else?
No, go ahead. Whatever you want.
Okay. I know your show is a lot about talking about what the problems we have in America, and I'm totally for that. We need to do that a lot. But I just never hear anyone call up and complain about, you know, the way that the Middle East countries, a lot of their radicals act. And, I mean, just today, I mean, car bomb came in and blew up five Iraqi churches during worship time. And it's just like the way they are expressing their dissent is through absolute terror and violence. And I get angrier and angrier because they flash it on TV every 5 seconds. Anytime there's a terrorist attack anywhere,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like, it just makes you angry. It doesn't matter who it was that got killed. I mean, innocent Iraqis.
Of course. I mean, we should, and that's good of you. Our compassion goes out to everyone, every innocent victim. And you know, there's never an excuse. Everybody has an excuse for killing civilians. And whatever they say, whatever reason, it just winds up there's a lot of innocent people, men, women, children, that are blown to bits because someone else has said, it is justified, we're sorry about that, but it's justified because. And they've always got this reason. To me, there's never anything that justifies harming unarmed people.
Right, and I just want to say one last thing.
Sure.
You know, with that point, you know, like, I disagree with Michael Moore a lot. I mean, I applaud his patriotism and, you know, going at it and trying to change the world for the better in his view,
yeah.
which is fine. But, you know, I'd like to hear people like him and these celebrities come out and say, you know, what's wrong with the Sudan? You know, what's wrong with places that, I mean, to hate America. I don't hate America at all. I love living here. But, you know, we have a pretty good country as far as, like, you know, opportunities and people are coming around. There's a lot of people that are coming around with racism and bigotry, and, you know, it's better than it was 40 years ago. And I just want to see, you know, people come out and just, you know, point the finger somewhere else once in a while. I mean, this is not the worst country. Bush is not an evil devil. I mean, he's a flawed president. I give you that. But.
Well, I think what we have to do, first and foremost, is take care of ourselves. And when I spend all of my time being critical of the American government, just let go, you know, one of the reasons I think will be kind of interesting to people, I'm assuming Kerry is going to win, just wait till I open up on him. Just like I was critical of Bush and Gore for the whole era of the 90s, because that should be what, you know, the role of a vigilant citizenry and a vigilant media to look for the problems and to say, well, here, they're doing this wrong, and we're not meeting our potential, and this could be done better. And then if overall we like what the people have done, well, then they can be reelected. But there's no sense in sitting around saying, and I'm not saying you are, saying, you know, we're number one. Well, that gets us absolutely nowhere. Who cares whether we're number one or number 41? What I care about is what's this country like? What are its problems, and what potential does it have, and is it being met? Does my heart go out, and sometimes even my help in small ways go out to the people of Sudan or the people of any other number of places in the world? Sure it does. And we should think about, either we should certainly never be aligned with the kind of dictators that that Reagan and the first Bush got us involved with, everybody from right-wing dictators in Latin America and Saddam Hussein himself. But that's one opening way we could do it. I mean, a lot of the misery in the world is because of the dictatorships that the United States has propped up over the years.
Yeah, some of them I totally agree. And like I said, I wasn't saying that was just, you're the only one that does that. Trust me, I'm not saying. I enjoy your show a lot, so. You have a good night, Peter. Take care.
Hey, all right, thank you. And, you can hate the show. I mean, I'm pleased to say that, but you can hate the show and all of that. Now, this is on my website. I don't know what to say about this. There is a website called Capitol Hill Blue, and this is Bush using drugs to control depression and erratic behavior. President George W. Bush is taking powerful antidepressant drugs to control his erratic behavior, depression, and paranoia, Capitol Blue has learned. The prescription drugs administered by Colonel Richard J. Tubb, the White House physician, can impair the president's mental facilities and decreases both his physical capabilities and his ability to respond in a crisis, administration aides admit privately. So, I don't think it's the most... what would you say? I don't know. I'm having it. I have it up on the website as speculation, and like most of the printed word or reports we get, it should put this idea in your mind and then see what in reality confirms or denies it. That's my my rationale for having it up there. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. Awesome show.
Thank you.
Absolutely awesome. I've just got a question for you. I wanted to get your personal opinion, and I know you won't be able to offer much more than that. But as far as these right-wing talk show hosts go, like Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Coulter, all those different people, in your estimation, which one of the following do they fit into? And then I'll just let you comment on it. Do they believe the things that they're saying, and as far as they know, they're speaking the truth and just trying to get the truth out to others? Or do they think, well, no, we're lying about a lot of stuff all the time, but it's in service of a greater good that the common person couldn't possibly fathom, so we have to lie to them, but it's in service of the world being happier once we get through with our stuff? Or are they just mostly people that said, look, I get it, the way masses respond to media stimulation, and if I come across as aligned with authority and play this part, I'll get rich, I'll always have an audience, and really that's the way the world works.
Well, let me
truth be damned.
I think those are excellent questions. Let me turn it back on you. I've wondered this before. What do you think?
What do I think?
Yeah, which of the three?
In my heart,
yeah.
I feel confronted constantly because I know a lot of people that love those right-wing folks.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hear them speak, and even when I look at their faces, from within, I'm repulsed. And I see this person knows. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like it's a manufactured personality. They study how to speak and how to come across as, their whole shtick. It's just a shtick. They don't believe a thing that they're saying. And that's just my gut reaction.
These are the hosts. These are the Limbaughs.
Exactly.
Can people live with themselves if they do that? I wonder these same questions. I said, how can they believe this? I know the function. You may have heard me say this before. The function of these right-wing talk show hosts is to help these people that realize that they're in a polemic against reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you always think, well, they got Bush now, or they have this conservative ideologue dead to rights, and you turn on Rush or Sean or somebody like that, and they're just explaining why it's perfectly all right.
Right, and it seems like the more they're exposed, the more fervently their followers support them.
Yeah, and
it's like this mass retardation effect.
And the anger that they have for rebels, and we've talked about that before, this authoritarian personality structure, which turns out then to even to be a mass psychology of submission, mm-hmm. and that people would rather submit to authority even when it's not in their best interest. I mean, I did this interview for the Mirror newspapers, And they said, what aggravates you? And I said, seeing a Bush Cheney sign on the lawn of a working class home.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, how dumb could these people be? Everything about their life is worsening. Their sons and daughters, because that's normally who is out there in the Army, are paying the ultimate cost. We're going to hit 1,000 dead GIs pretty soon, and we're over 6,000 severely wounded GIs. And they just keep repeating the mantra that has been put in their heads by these multimillionaires, whether it's Rush Limbaugh or anybody in the Bushco administration. So you really have to go to, you know, some deep psychology about this fear of authority, this submission before father figures, a life filled with fear and rage, and also a fear of any ambiguity. I mean, that when they keep talking about Kerry being a flip-flopper, it's not just that they say he's changed his opinion or he has a nuanced view of the world. Here is a person that is not rock solid, no matter what. It's like Cheney. Cheney's still going around connecting Al-Qaeda with September 11th, where everybody, including even Bush, has said there's absolutely no connection.
Yeah, it's scary.
They are scary people because eventually they are the popular base of fascism, not democracy.
All right.
I'll thank
see you, Peter. Down with Bush.
All right. I think he's going down. But, hey, Kerry, you got to, add to the effort. You can't just go out there and, wave all these flags like Bush. Man, I thought I had the Republican convention on half the time when I was watching the Democrats. They're talking about war. The war commander reporting for duty, sir, and all of that. And, all those flags flying. What is this, the Republican convention? They're trying to appeal, I guess, to some of those folks. I figure they got everybody to the left of Mussolini, right? That has politics to the left of Mussolini. So now they got to get like the rest of us. That fringe. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
I was just calling. I was driving home. The question you posed as to did the Bush supporters, were they aware of that this was a possibility that he would be filtrating money back to benefit himself? Voters are informed. Who in their right mind that voted for Bush would not assume that his father is the puppet master? He's the puppet. And that, of course, all the money is going to be anything invested, any decisions made would not benefit the Bush family. And all the supporters are right there along with him. Had they not invested in that, they didn't vote for him. Does that not make any sense at all?
Well, I know what you're saying.
They were not duped. They went along with it.
Yeah, and it's funny. That's what I mean, that the psychology that demands they submit to authority, to the wealthy and the powerful and people that are higher up than them on the hierarchy or higher up in the pyramid, even though they are the cannon fodder for their wars, even though they're just dog meat for their factories and their offices and not getting rewarded and their tax dollars stolen and given away. I don't know if you heard me earlier, just even passed out in cash to Iraqis, they still have to submit to the authority of the father.
Exactly.
You know what? I can't say the word. Actually, it's past 12. I could even probably say it, but I won't. They are psychoanalytic chicken, And as tough as they are, as many manly pursuits as they take on, they still don't have the guts to take on the big man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, thank you very much.
The supporters that voted for Bush were not duped. They knew what was coming.
No, I think you're probably right.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for letting my opinion being voiced.
That's what we're here for.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you. One of the things, and whenever we mention this organization, let me start off in a different way. The Manchurian Candidate with Denzel Washington and Meryl Streep. An interesting film. I don't think it holds a candle to the original one, which I just saw about 3 weeks ago. Still, it's pretty interesting. It's pretty chilling. It's kind of well done. I mean, I think it needed some different editing, but so what? That's my opinion. But it's when you go into the film and you see it, and people talk about that the communists of the 1962 film as the bad guys have been replaced by this a mega corporation of the 21st century. Everybody's saying it's Halliburton. Everybody knows Halliburton, and they, you know, there's no bid contracts and charging us an arm and a leg for stuff. They're selling gas for nickel a gallon to Iraqis and charging the government. I don't know what. Yeah, all of that. So it's Halliburton. No, it's not Halliburton. It's the Carlyle Group. It's the Carlyle Group that's made up of people like Bush's father and the ex-prime minister of Britain. And for a while, there was a bin Laden member of the company and all of that. And they're the sector that owns all these armaments, so they were part of the... You know, they made all the money destroying Iraq. And then it's Halliburton that rebuilds it. So it's the symmetry of this racket. So we don't live under a government. We live under essentially a racket that doesn't have to extort money from us, because most of us, well, I don't know so much anymore, but for a long while, we were willingly saying, oh, yeah, take our money, give it to Carlyle Group. I mean, no one even knew who the Carlyle Group was. Give it to Halliburton. Just so as long as we have this powerful man on television telling us we're going to smite our enemies and our way of life is going to be protected. Yeah. Doesn't matter how much our pocket's getting picked. The Carlyle Group. You go to my website and check it out, or I always have, I have trouble spelling it. C-A-R-Y-L, Carlyle, I got it. C-A-R-L-Y-L-E, C-A-R-L-Y-L-E. Just Google it, Carlyle Group, or go to my website, and you can see the connection there as well. But do see the Manchurian Candidate. In fact, go get the DVD of the original one. It's pretty compelling. And... It's an interesting film. It doesn't really, I mean, if you weren't real aware, you wouldn't even see that it, you know, what kind of political film it is, that much at least. You know, bad corporations, gee, what a concept. And being the evil guys in a film, that's not real new either, is it? But you listen to some of the kind of the ambient sound and the newscasts that are going on in the background, and a lot of that's pretty political. All right, let's continue onward. I'm Peter Werby. This is the Night Call Show. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Please join us. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, it's Peter.
Yeah, it's Peter. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. I've tried several times to reach you, but let me just start off by saying, you know, I don't hope you don't cut me off.
Go ahead.
I think you're kind of a lunatic fringe, but beyond that, I think a lot of things you say are right on, especially the fact that we need to get rid of Bush. We can't take another 4 years. So, this country can't take another 4 years of him.
But wait, wasn't there a rock song called Lunatic Fringe? Like 80?
Oh, yeah, Red Rider.
Red Rider. Hey, man, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not trying to dish you or anything. But
no, that's a compliment where I come from.
I don't jump both feet after everything you say.
But wait a minute. But why, if you think that Bush has got to go, why do you think I'm the lunatic fringe? I don't even take that as an insult, but...
Well, I just think you're a little far left, you know, but I'm a Democrat. My wife is a, what you call a yellow dog Democrat. Her father was, too, and, you know...
Tell people what that means.
I'm pretty sure it means you'd vote for any Democrat no matter what.
Yeah, it's an old Southern phrase. It said he'd vote for a yellow dog if the Democrats had put him up for office.
Right.
Right.
One thing that caught me when you're talking about like the people giving away the people on patrol giving away money is, you remember back when they were going to get Uday and Kusay, and like, you know, Saddam knew the jig was up and he was bolting. They had, like, trailerfuls of U.S. currency,
mm-hmm.
as they said. And, like, whatever happened to all that? It's like, you know, that's all still out there, right? I mean...
Yeah, they have... They send over chests filled with cash to Iraq as part of this program where United States soldiers give it away to Iraqis in cash. And, like, all the Kurds in the north, it's the only people... The only place where it's at least kind of calm. Although it was a bombing there, I guess, yesterday. So they send over chests filled with American cash, $20 bills primarily.
I understand that, but I'm saying the Iraqis already had... Hussein already had... U.S. current, that was his rainy day fund.
Right.
And it was cash, you know, bills, and it took trailer trucks filled with it.
Yeah.
They said they were, like, emptying banks and stuff, you know. And, like, whatever happened to that? That's still out there, you know?
I don't know. Well, maybe they're, hopefully they're giving that away, not our tax dollars. But what did they pay the informant for Uday and, like, what were the other guys?
I don't know.
It was like $20 million. And don't you think somebody would have dropped a dime on the two of them for like $100,000?
Well, yeah. Well, the whole thing is costing like is costing us billions of dollars. And like Kerry in his acceptance speech was saying, like, you know, we're building fire stations in Baghdad and closing them in Chicago.
Yeah, and what do you mean, Chicago, in Michigan, in Detroit,
in
Northville?
I live in Ann Arbor, and they're playing round robin with the fire stations here.
Wow!
It's like they close them every other day or whatever. They close another one, you know. And they said it hasn't affected the response time only like by a minute. But it's like, oh, minutes a lot. If your house is on fire, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, but another thing I was thinking is you were saying about the how, you know, you posed a question, or I think a caller posed a question. How does it really affect you, whether what candidate's in office? And I can tell you, you know, myself, I'm a Teamster, and I know that the stock market and stuff has affected me a great deal because what my union puts into my retirement was cut in half recently.
Sure.
Because of the stock market performance, and I would have to work till I'm 60, and I do a physical job, and I certainly can't work till I'm 60.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd have to retire early, and for every year you retire early, it's a chunk off your retirement.
Sure it is.
And then also the health care, people that retired, guys that retired together 30 years in, they retired, and, like, now they're getting whacked with all this, health care costs that, like, amount to most of the retirement, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely insane. And I think the next big scandal, similar to the 1980s SNL scandal, is going to be these airlines. They're going to start shaking off their pension funds and just say, that they're in Chapter 11 and they can't pay them. So the richest country in the world, so where's all this money going? Huh. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate your call. I love it. Lunatic Fringe. If what we got to start doing, Dan, is getting with these bumpers, which we call the things, you know, that come back into spots and all that, we could use that. That old Red Rider tune. Man, how many people remember that? Derek writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Love you, Pete. Listen every week. I want to get on your mailing list. Where can I sign up? Simply by writing to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And Derek, what is it? Is there a way to listen in Detroit? What are you listening to? The internet? Maybe you are. Just go to 101.1 FM on your dial. And Riff Rocks Detroit. Come on, dude. Peace out. All right, sure. Are we going to line six? It is. All right, thank you. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing, Pete?
Doing well.
You got a brand new fan tonight. I never even knew about the radio show, but I was flipping through the channels, and I heard you say Bush Coast. I'm like, oh, I got to stop.
Well, welcome.
Yeah, I'm calling from Detroit. Name's Greg.
Hi, Greg.
If you're going to take left fringe, then I'm already in the asylum.
I think there's a lot of us.
I cannot deal with the right. Same thing everywhere. If it's TV, you go to these chat rooms. All they want to do, they won't argue the points with you. They'll just attack you. That's what they do. The right wing attacks people's personalities. Bush, he is the antichrist of the right wing. he's a dumb man. Jerry Springer said it best. I'm not mad that he stole the election. I'm mad that he ran. No one from big business can complain about how Clinton did with the 90s. This country did all right, except everybody did all right. The money wasn't condensed to the rich and the wealthy. You know what I'm saying?
I do indeed.
And so everybody, that's what Democrats do. They get richer by making everybody richer. And the Republicans, they get rich by breaking people.
You know, Greg, the only thing, I agree with what you're saying. I was thinking, though, I don't know why I got stuck on this. You were saying in chat rooms and stuff like that. There's a lot of people, if you want to say on the left, that listen to these right-wing talk shows all the time, get in these chat rooms and talk with these right-wingers. And I don't know how you guys do it. I can't even stand to listen to them for more than like a minute and a half. And to talk with them, you know, in fact, there's an old Detroit saying, if someone, and don't take this wrong, uh-huh. that they say, if you're standing on the corner talking to a fool, a passerby doesn't know who the fool is, right?
Right. right.
So, yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I waste too much energy. I'm done now because, like I said, I don't like personal attacks. I don't know why slap me for this, but I go for good, clean debate. Something
yeah.
I should learn against when we talk about the right. But just listening to these, these right wing talk shows. I mean, Rush, Hannity, my favorite Tucker Carlson. Got to love a man who's not ashamed to wear a bow tie after you.
Yeah.
But and what you were saying, you touched on so many points that I've been trying to hammer into people's heads. Specifically, it's not about race, it's not about color, it's not about religion. It's about class. It's about money.
Sure.
No one in America making under 80, 70 grand a year has any business voting Bush Cheney. It's logic.
It is, and it doesn't seem to register with lots of people. I'll tell you, Greg, what I've been doing. I've actually been, you can imagine in my business, turned out to be this absolute news junkie.
Yeah, me too.
So I've been kind of backing off a lot of it and just reading fiction again and kind of escaping a little because it's ugly out there.
Same stuff I gave up. I mean, that's the thing. I gave up reading fiction. I've just been reading nonfiction and just been getting with the times. Like, I've read books. I've read all Michael Moore's books.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me like 2 or 3 days to read those. I read Al Franken's last book. And I read just anything nonfiction, just knowing about the world, reading how really sick politics can be. And no one can discredit Michael Moore to me. I just wanted to touch on that. I know I don't have all the time in the world to say, I'll call back next Sunday so I can finish this because I got a lot of stuff to say. I've just been itching to vent to somebody to feel the way I do.
Well, I'm pleased you found us. Thank you, Greg.
All right. Thank you, Peter. I'll talk to you next Sunday.
All right. Bye-bye now. That's interesting. I think I said that last week when I always think that since this show has been on for the last 34 years that everyone who's calling and listening has been around for a long time, but we get new people all the time. It's great.
Hey, it's Mike Walters from The Morning Show, and I'm as excited as you are that summer is officially here. Summer, of course, means hot weather, but extreme temperatures can really affect your car's transmission, and you certainly don't need a breakdown in the middle of a summer road trip or when you're rolling around town with your buds. So if you're hearing any grinding, feeling slipping, seeing fluid, or think you might have a transmission problem, visit one of AAMCO's 4 locations in the Detroit area. Call 1-800-GO-AAMCO, that's AAMCO, for the center nearest you. Tell them I sent you for a free diagnostic check at participating centers. Just call for an appointment. AAMCO technicians are the best in the field. They're trained and certified in advanced transmission diagnosis, repair, and maintenance. So taking your car to AAMCO is like having vacation insurance. And with the skyrocketing gas prices, a better running car means better gas mileage. For a job done right, guaranteed, at a price that's right, AAMCO, AAMCO.
Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist. Whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Do you have what it takes to be the elite of the elite? Immerse yourself in a competitive army tournament with America's Army Special Forces, the only video game developed by the world's premier land force, the United States Army. From the barracks to the battlefield, it's the most authentic military game you'll ever play. Team-based missions include combat search and rescue, direct action, surveillance and reconnaissance, and unconventional warfare. Think you've got what it takes? Visit www.americasarmy.com and try your skills. What is the U.S. Army? It is having the individual strength and the support of an unstoppable team. Being a soldier also means upholding the ideals set forth in the U.S. Constitution and becoming a respected part of your community. Become stronger, smarter, and better prepared for challenges through training, technology, and support. To learn more about the many different opportunities available in the U.S. Army, visit GoArmy.com or call 1-800-USA-ARMY today.
This is WRIM.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked to Gene Simmons of KISS. Of course, we had to ask about Peter and our dear friend Ace.
They're both sweethearts. Hopefully, they're taking care of their health, which is more important than being on tour in a rock band.
Well, there's just so many comical aspects to him also. Just the business of him, that he likes to take things apart, but he rarely puts them back together again. And
I've given him a few cell phones. You know, if they didn't, they had a click or something, yeah. Let me fix it. He tears them apart. I'm going, oh, that's what the inside looks like.
Yeah.
I'm going, okay, can I have it back? No, it's not working.
Not a chance. There's no way that cell phone's going back together again.
You don't let him do that in your studio, do you?
I stopped letting him do lots of stuff.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast
on the Riff. 101-101.
Riff.
Twice is nice. Hoover Tuesday on the Riff.
Everyone, listen up.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Hoover Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock bands.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hoover Tuesday.
Double the Riff Rock.
Double the Riff Prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Hoover Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
It really rocks.
Now, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
It's on the Riff.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Mike tried to get through a review of some art house flick, House of Sand and Fog. Yeah, there's a big budget thriller. Anyway, the Peanut Gallery had a pretty short attention span for this one.
Her dad had this house. She ended up getting the house, and she never opened her mail. And eventually the city took the house from her. She's trying to get the house
boring.
Back. And basically these foreigners moved in and they built a porch higher up so that you could see the water in the distance, and they called it a water view to double their money.
Boring.
And that movie was playing in the theater with Old Milwaukee, and strippers were drowning in it. I wouldn't step foot inside. Seriously, my wife would need a roll of duct tape and a wheelbarrow to get me to that one.
There's that vicious suicide in the end. I think it's like the Comcast On Demand or something.
If you superglued my genitalia to a cannon.
Be ignored by the mainstream press. These were the same talking heads that complained that there was nothing exciting at the convention. That's a good point. I guess these speeches and the protests outside the Fleet Center weren't exciting enough for them, so much for the liberal media. Right. All right, back to our phones. We got our interviews at 1 a.m. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air. Good evening.
Peter, how you doing?
Doing good.
This is Mohammed from Dearborn.
Hi, Mohammed.
All right. Well, I'm just calling, you know, I just want to let you know. I'm 26 years old, and I've grew up a big music fan in general, but I'm a huge rap fan. Just giving you a little background, not to go too much further detail, but I'm a huge rap fan, and it just sickens me to see Bill O'Reilly have nothing better to do than pick on these young black rappers and musicians for what they say, you know, when they have their God-given rights. So all of a sudden, I hear he's boycotting this artist, Jadakiss, because he, you know, one of his lyrics of the songs he objected to. I don't know if you heard it.
I did, because it's some of the, what was the deal, that Bush caused 911 or something?
Yeah, he's saying, his song is called Why. He goes, why did Bush knock down the towers?
Oh, yeah.
And then he further went and explained it, saying, he's not saying that Bush knocked down the towers. What he was trying to say is he had all this evidence, which we all know now, and, you know, from the 911 and everything that he could have done to stop him, you know. Like you said in the Fahrenheit 9/11, you know, he's going to spend most of his time on vacation. So when somebody falls asleep behind the wheel in any job, that person would usually get fired.
In any European country, any number of any one of maybe 150 Bush Co. scandals over the last 3.5 years would have brought the government down.
Oh, and I know.
They just figure here, whatever happens, they just, in a week, the American public just kind of forgets about it. But it's beginning to pile on. I mean, people are getting the message, I think.
And it really irks me that this guy, O'Reilly, has the balls to just... And he claims that he's not racist. That's the thing. I mean, every time a black guy does something, like Ludacris, he had a problem with Ludacris doing a Pepsi commercial, so he boycotted Pepsi, and then Pepsi dropped Ludacris. And then who did they end up signing to do a commercial? The Osbournes. Who dropped the F-bomb on MTV? Went a little bit. Ludacris has it on record, and he says it. But these guys do it in their own homes and have a reality TV show. But it's okay. He never said anything about that, you know?
But you know, Muhammad, in a way, it's... I guess I would ask you or say to you the same thing I did to the caller before you. Greg, I don't know why you watch this stuff. I mean, they're always calling for boycotts, and people that can't stand Rush Limbaugh or O'Reilly, and they listen to them. You know how many times I've seen the O'Reilly show? Zero. Absolute zero. Never saw it.
I've tuned in a couple of times. Like, sure. So, like, just, you know, watching a train wreck, you know?
Well, I just can't stand it. Here's what happens to me. I mean, one of the reasons that I turn off Limbaugh, every clause that he says is either a lie, misinformation, contains a premise based on something false, or something that just drives me nuts. So he'll begin, and I think that's not true, but and I'm starting to formulate the counter argument, and then he's completed his sentence, and already embedded in there are three pieces of BS, and I'm going, no, and then he's on to the next sentence, which is similar, and I just go, this is going to drive me insane. So.
Right.
I can't listen.
Another thing I have with these, you know, right wing. Anybody who's really right wing. I mean, you think, okay, right wing, being right wing, you rich. I mean, if you follow logic, you know, rich mostly, white, probably educated. You think that they're educated, you know,
mm-hmm.
But then you look at a lot of these right wing leaders, and they're pretty much as dumb as dog crap, you know.
They are, they are particularly...
And just so like, you know, like, so not open-minded, just closed-minded to everything.
Well, they are closed-minded, and they're the people that always cause problems politically. They're the people, unlike most people in this country, that know that we can all just get along, to quote a famous philosopher. And but when you think about it, think about the chaos that has been created by the Republicans over the last 10 years. I mean, they were bound and determined to drive Bill Clinton from office. I mean, he sure helped them by being, not being able to control his, well, never mind. But anyways, they revel in these crises because I think partly they're a pack of psychos, and partly they realize that will make them popular, at least with a good sector of the population. All right, Muhammad, we're getting towards the end of the show, so thank you for joining us. All right, bye-bye now. You know, I may be making an assumption myself, but I suspect Mohammed calling from Dearborn is probably of Middle Eastern heritage. The U.S. Census Bureau has provided population data on Arab Americans to the Department of Homeland Security, including their ancestry in the cities and postal areas in which they live, according to the New York Times. So, remember we were talking earlier about concentration camps and all of that? This beginning to identify people racially is exactly what the Nazis did. And am I saying that the Department of Homeland Security are Nazis? No. Am I saying the Census Bureau is or George Bush is? No. But I'm telling you, when you begin to identify people by race, ethnicity, religion, or what have you, we're heading down a road that you would not associate with a free and democratic country. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, how you doing, Peter Orbit?
Doing well.
The guy that was talking earlier, he even got me started. You know, the first time I listened to Bill O'Reilly, I listened one time, and I thought, you know, this guy's, you know, he knows what's going on in the world. And it happened to be he was, you know, ran against somebody that I didn't like.
Okay.
And but it's like the second, third time I tried listening to him, I thought he's just the most arrogant person. He cuts everybody off.
You know, there's a movie, I know I'm cutting you off a little, so excuse me, but there's a documentary out called Outfoxed, and they have, in fact, I think you can probably go to outfoxed.com or something like that, and they have a trailer on there of what do you call it, O'Reilly, saying that he never cuts anybody off, and then they have scene after scene of him saying, shut up! I said, shut up! Cut his mic off! Shut up! These are each different...
He says, when I'm giving you the last word,
yeah,
and he gives him 5 seconds, and then he jumps in and spouts his maniacal crap out, and then they go to commercial. But the reason I call this is I'm ashamed. I feel terrible. I didn't vote in the last election. I thought, you know, what's the odds of George Bush getting elected? You know,
mm-hmm.
And he didn't get elected. He got appointed.
Yeah, exactly.
He got appointed, and I feel terrible, man. I have watched, you know, after the towers fell down and all these people, and I'm a drinker. I spend time in a bar, and there's all these patriotic cats in there, you know, and it's like he's doing the right thing, and I haven't seen the 9/11 film, the Fair 9/11 film, none of that stuff. I just feel he started something to cover up his incompetence.
Well,
I felt that sense of the beginning, and I feel bad to be, and I told you so. Because I thought, hey, maybe this is all going to work out. This is all going to be right. He's doing the right thing, and I'm a nincompoop. And I'm going to be wrong.
Well, it turned out to be the opposite.
It is the opposite. And I remember when it happened. And I've got eight uncles. I've got seven of my dad's brothers, besides my father, and an uncle by marriage. It all served in the war.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being in the pub and the guys talking about what all we need to do, and I said, listen, I'm sorry, but you need to talk to somebody who's been in a war.
Sure.
You know, you need to talk to somebody who's been in the war before you decide to send people over there.
Well, the only experience, of course, that Bush had was avoiding the draft by having his dad get him into the Texas Air National Guard, and then even that, because he was the kind of kid that knew he could get away with anything, and so he just went AWOL for a year.
He got mad because, basically, in his perception, he got mad because some ARAB threatened to kill his dad.
Well, they say there was an attack, but it's not even clear that there was an attack for sure.
But, I mean, I'm saying that, you know, the Osama and Saddam Hussein, you know, they put out a bounty on George Sr. You know, and I can understand. I'd be mad if somebody did that to my dad.
Yeah, they were kind
of
to you.
But I would think I would try to get in a plane and go over there and take care of it myself. I would not send 100,000 kids of other people's children over there to take care of my battle.
Well, before it all started, Michael Moore was trying to set up a man-on-man contest between George W. and Saddam and let them settle it. You know, that way thousands of people would still be alive. All right, I got to go. I'm almost out of time, so thank you very much for calling. Daryl from Sterling Heights writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Hey, Peter, I'm sure you know about Bush and Kerry belong to the secret society Skull and Bones at Yale University. I know there are some crazy or maybe not so crazy conspiracy theories on this society and its motives. Just wondering what your views and ideas on this are. Well, you know, they're both come from the ruling class, and they probably will both act. Let me start with Bush. Bush acts out the logic of the greedy corporations that will do anything to accomplish higher next quarter profits, no matter who suffers, no matter, you know, what the political, social, economic consequences are. They don't have any vision beyond 3 months. Kerry represents those sectors of wealth that understand that there has to be an administration of the economy and of the empire that doesn't piss everybody off the way Bush has, that doesn't get us involved in endless wars, even though, you know, it benefits people close to the administration. And so in many ways, you can see some similarities between the two administrations, one that is and one that wants to be. Big money sees Bush as reckless, sees these wars of overextending the military, of frittering away our money on these wild adventures that that don't even turn out well. I mean, Afghanistan is going to hell. They got 20,000 troops over there. I say they, Bush Co., not we. We don't have 20,000 troops over there. They do, and they're talking about more. Where are the more going to come from? I don't know. This is going to be very interesting in the next few months. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air.
Yeah, Pete, this is Ed from Taylor.
Hi, Ed.
I was wondering, one question. You know when there's pictures of the mistreatment of the prisoners in that Abu Ghraib and that?
Sure.
When they stopped it because the Pentagon said, you know, it was like, it was dangerous for people. It was like that Berg got killed and that. But I was thinking at the time, you know, I mean, the whole thing is kind of dangerous. You think they might have done that to help Bush? Because that was really hurting him.
Well, it's like I said, everything disappears after a week. What happened to that big scandal?
Yeah, I mean, well, what they did was they said, you know, they didn't want no more pictures released. Or
sure.
No more. They had videos and everything, and it all just went away.
Seymour Hersh, who exposed a lot of that in the New Yorker magazine, says that there are films of American soldiers sodomizing children. And he's been the source for it all, and if he says he has them, there's no reason to think that he doesn't.
Yeah, that would have been bad, and I remember the Pentagon was saying they didn't want no more released in that, and it just all, you know, it just seemed like they were kind of like helping him with that, you know what I mean?
Well, sure. He's the commander-in-chief, right?
Yeah, and but, you know, that's the sort of the Army. Yeah, that's true, but, you know, I don't think they should be getting political like that in a way. You know?
Absolutely not.
And I saw Kerry tonight.
Yeah.
And I got to shake his hand, and he's a charismatic speaker, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to... I'm wondering about the debates that they're going to have. I kept thinking, too, could you imagine a Clinton and Bush debate? And in, you know, after Bush successfully stole the election, you know, his dad's friends assigned him the office in late 2000... it was like December 12th, Bush went to the White House and met Clinton. Clinton is a huge guy. I mean, Dan, maybe you don't think he's huge, but to most people, he's huge. He's probably like 6'2". What are you, 6'3"? So you're 6'6"? Good grief. Anyways, Clinton's, I don't know, 6'2", 6'3", something like that, and really a commanding figure. And Bush looked like he was going to pee in his pants. I think Bush is about 5'8". Now, you know, not that stature has anything to do with it, but, you know, I mean, size can be intimidating. But it was just, you know, Bush knew he was, like, totally out of his league. All right, I got to take my last call. Thanks a lot. Appreciate yours. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
I'm only 5'11", but it's a solid 240 pounds.
That is, well, is it solid? I'm 5'11", and I weigh 175, and I think I've got like 5 to 10 pounds too much on me.
Irish potato peasant.
I've got some muscles. Is that cut or not, Dan? It's cut. Okay, go ahead. I was just flexing my muscle for him.
I was calling about the war on drugs. I just found out there's a little quirky law that the Sage Solomon's up in Lansing passed.
What's that?
If your tests are positive for drugs or alcohol on your job,
yeah,
go through the rehab and get rehired by that same company.
Yeah,
you are then permanently barred from ever collecting unemployment from that company again.
Oh my God! Well, hey, so, I mean, I'm sure that you know, they didn't have anything else to do, that legislature.
So somebody like me, where I go through seasonal layoffs,
yeah,
I get to go 2 weeks without a paycheck.
Great.
It's you know, it's a further victimization of you know, tested positive for marijuana.
Yeah. Oh my God, you are an evil man.
By a nanogram, I was one nanogram over the legal limit.
Ah.
So I now no longer have a right to collect unemployment from that company, and it gives the companies a further economic incentive to
test.
You know. To test, yeah.
Yeah, to get into our personal lives. As the late Abby Hoffman used to say, that companies have the right to have a drug-free workplace, but drug-free workforce, that's none of their business as long as people are doing the job. All right, sorry that that happened here. What a drag. Got to go. Just wanted to tell you, somebody just sent this. Let me see if I can pick up their name on this real quickly to give them credit. Mike. Mike sent it. But I heard about this. Michael Moore and Bill Maher are on their hands and knees begging Ralph Nader to drop out of the 2004 political race. I'll put this on my website maybe tomorrow. I don't think I'm too tired to do it tonight. All right, got some great interviews ahead, so stay tuned for those. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Got more just after these.
Hey, you. Yeah? You. Hey, it's late night. You're sitting there, and you're thinking about your mortgage. Well, you can go to rockfinancial.com right now. That's right. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can go to rockfinancial.com. And there's a lot of reasons to visit. Find out how you can get a $200,000 loan for a lower payment than you would ever think. Also, find out about the Smart Arm. Maybe you're not going to be in your house that long, and you've got to take a look. If you're like most Americans, you might have $7,500 or more in credit card debt. Might be time to use the mortgage and consolidate that debt. No reason to have outstanding bad debt like credit card debt when you can have good debt, low interest, and tax deductible. Use your mortgage. Go to rockfinancial.com right now. You can check out the mortgage calculators. See how much home you can afford if you're thinking about a new purchase. A lot of reasons to go. So go right now, rockfinancial.com. Even though it's late, you go to rockfinancial.com. Anytime, anywhere, evenings or weekends, you can go to rockfinancial.com. Michigan's largest mortgage company, rockfinancial.com.
Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company, an equal housing lender. Details at rockfinancial.com.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. You pay only shipping and handling. Call now, have your credit card handy, and try Maxtral free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
I'm here with Ms. Alma Sheridan, who's showing off all the things she's bought with her gambling winnings.
This is the display case where I keep my collection of rare figurines bought with the winnings at the slot machine. What's that, dear?
Well, it's empty.
Oh, well, yes, that's true. See, my money's still in the machine, but I'll get it back. Now, this room is my pride and joy, furnished with priceless Victorian antiques, thanks to the roulette table.
Well, say, don't those chairs fold?
Well, they'll be Victorian antiques when that lousy marble starts landing on the right numbers.
You know, Alma, gambling's fun, but odds are against you making big profits, which is why the Michigan Department of Community Health urges you to please gamble responsibly.
Do you like my gown? It's an Italian design.
Isn't that a jogging suit, Alma?
Sure, now it is.
To learn about the warning signs of problem gambling, you can call 1-800-270-7117.
Say, what's your favorite color?
Blue.
Red, you say?
That's 1-800-270-7117.
Stick around. More Night Call with Peter Werby. Coming up next.
Welcome to Makeovers Extreme.
We're down to Tiffany and Randy. Tiffany?
I've had two facelifts and a nose job.
Okay, Randy, you've transformed your face. What's your extreme secret?
Triple blade closeness. I ditched my twin blade razor for a Schick Extreme 3.
The number one selling triple blade disposable razor. Very smooth, Randy.
Yeah, I've never had such a close, comfortable shave.
No fair, he cheated.
You can buy an Extreme 3 for women, too.
I can?
Yeah.
Okay, you win.
We have a winner. Extreme closeness. Extreme comfort. Schick Extreme 3.
You don't need to have a makeover extreme to look your best. You can find everything you need in the health and beauty aisle at Meijer. Whether it's the Schick Extreme 3 razors that give you a close, comfortable shave, or the selection of shaving cream, lotions, hair care, and much more. Your neighborhood Meijer store has everything for both men and women, plus great prices on Extreme 3 disposable razors from Schick, right now at Meijer. So stop by your Meijer store today for great, friendly service to make shopping extremely pleasant.
Jim, what's this?
Oh, hi, hon.
You know how we earned all those credits on AirTrans A-Plus rewards? And we've been having some trouble deciding whether to use them to go to Bermuda or Greece?
Uh-huh.
Well, I made this giant wheel of vacation to help us out. We'll just leave this decision up to Lady Luck.
But how come there's like 87 spaces marked Bermuda and one marked Greece?
Well, I thought you should at least have a slight chance of winning. All right, here we go.
Hey, it landed on Greece!
You know, best two out of three, of course.
Oh, Munga!
Greece again! Pack your bags, Bermuda boy!
AirTran Airways A-Plus Rewards Frequent Flyer Program. Fly any airline, anywhere in the world. How you decide where to go is entirely up to you. Sign up today. Visit AirTran.com. And right now, all 45 destinations are on sale. Book at AirTran.com by August 12th and fly by December 15th, 2004. AirTran Airways. Go. There's nothing stopping you. 10-day advance purchase required. Blackout dates apply.
This is WRIV in Detroit. Peter Werbe here with you. And please stay tuned for the interviews. I think you'll find them interesting. We'll talk live next week.
Thank you very much for joining me. There's been lots of human catastrophes throughout history, and usually they're highly focused. If you think about the two great wars of the last century, if you think about the flu epidemic of right after World War I, for instance, public attention was riveted on the consequences of the cure for it, and yet we're in the midst of something approaching in terms of death and devastation of communities, World War II, something, if I give you the initials for it, we'll all be aware of, but it certainly is not front and center of our consciousness. And I'm talking about the plague of AIDS. And joining us is Anne-Marie Dedeschi, and she's written a book called Moving Mountains, The Race to Treat Global AIDS. And Anne-Christine Dedeschi was at the International AIDS Committee in Bangkok last month, or I guess it was this month when we're recording, July 11th through the 16th. Anne-Christine Dedeschi, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
You're welcome. Good morning.
I suspect because this book treats your travels from, in some ways, what we could call the front lines of the AIDS epidemic, that I'm not underestimating the impact this is having on humanity.
I think it's not even something that we've yet really been able to appreciate. The book that I wrote really stemmed from reporting. I began reporting on the AIDS epidemic 20 years ago. I mean, it's been 23 years. But we really began to see more signs of the epidemic now that we are focusing on it. And so I think in places like Russia, which I do write about, or now in China, we really don't actually have a good sense of how widespread the epidemic is, because there hasn't been until recently enough focus on it. The government's been very late, and what we know is that you have this kind of brush fire spread. In China, the statistics, you know, keep getting revised every couple of months, now saying maybe 10 million people by 2007. In Russia, you know, they have 143 million people, and they estimate that in there, there's a crossover going from this original sort of the front lines, which are involving people who primarily are using heroin or drug users, and women who are also involved in commercial prostitution, but it's crossed over to just mainstream society. We really don't know. I mean, it could be a bigger epidemic in these places. It's an interesting question. Recently, just before the Bangkok conference, the epidemiology, or that is the study of the epidemic as an overall pandemic, was questioned, and people were saying that the numbers needed to be revised downward, that we'd actually overestimated the size of the epidemic. And I find that really surprising. I don't agree with the outcome, and I think what it is that it really shows that we've been basing a lot of the predictions on these generalizations and these kind of math models that stem from, you know, maybe targeting, for example, pregnant women, and then you sort of say, oh, well, this is what it is in pregnant women, and it must be this for the population at large. But if you base the epidemic on front lines, like these pockets or these hot zones, or what we call hot zones, of the infection in some of these countries, the statistics are far more worrisome. I mean, I profiled a couple of things in the book, but, you know, in places like Russia, you have 2 to 4% of the population that's estimated to be using drugs, and maybe of those, 60% are young people, and you're seeing this incredible epidemic of AIDS in very, very young boys and teenage boys who are using drugs. And very few of them are getting tested. Very few of them are you know, being informed about things like the risk of HIV in terms of both their sexual activity, and there's no clean needles available. They don't even offer methadone or any kind of drug treatment programs there, and the government is denying the problem. So I think it's hard for us to really estimate it, but it's having an incredible epidemic, you know, impact. And, you know, positive and negative. I mean, negative is what we can imagine, a huge death toll, suffering, but also some positive aspects to the response in terms of bringing in services.
Well, I certainly want to talk about that, because if we just have a dire view of it all, I mean, sometimes it is only a dire view, but if there's positive aspects, I certainly want to treat that as well. And Anne-Christine Dedeschi, I was remiss in not telling people your background. You're an award-winning journalist, author, and filmmaker, and you've written about AIDS and global politics for The Washington Post, The Los Angeles Times, The Nation, The Village Voice, and Out Magazine. And you've written a novel, and so you have a lot of accomplishments under your belt. The new book is Moving Mountains, The Race to Treat Global AIDS. It's published by Verso, V-E-R-S-O. When we hear the figure now of people infected, of pushing 50 million, is that what you're comfortable with, that figure?
You know, I cited 46 million, which was a figure that was put out, a kind of high-end figure, I think, a little bit, by the World Health Organization, just as I was wrapping up the book for the beginning, end of 2003, beginning of 2004. Since then, they've downward revised it, as I said, thinking that maybe they had overprojected for some places. But, you know, other people have gone as high as 70 million. I mean, I saw that figure cited once by Lori Garrett, who's a very good science journalist with Newsday. I guess I think the point is millions and millions of people. And, you know, up to 40% of adults in Botswana, you know, you go for those countries where the really hardest hit. And, you know, you're really talking about very, very few people who are not actively touched by this. And the impact on the economy, on the ability of these countries to just survive is really being threatened. So I think you go from that to a case like Morocco, which I profile, where because they're actually moving very much now to put in treatment and therefore also put in prevention, they may be in a situation where, because they have a very early epidemic, they could maybe possibly bring that under control, even though it's going to be very hard if other countries don't control it. Because, you know, this is a virus. It's a global pandemic. And, you know, I was saying in this book, just like with SARS or anthrax or other things, I mean, these kind of viruses don't really respect borders. So if you don't control something in one country, you're going to see it in another country. People travel, and there's, you know, there's a really a needed is a global response, and it affects us all. So
sure.
This point over and over again.
I think that what you're getting at, too, is once we start talking about millions, that if it's 20 million or 40 million or 60 million, once we start using that kind of numbers, millions, that it's not even too relevant to argue about the numbers. But let me ask you about public perception in this country. And you have a very, very interesting title, The Race to Treat Global AIDS, explains what your new book is about. Moving Mountains indicates, of course, this extraordinary effort that would have to be made. And it's not really even much on the public radar in the United States. And I guess you tell me if you agree, that I chalk it up to two things. One, that it's still seen by most Americans as a gay disease, and secondly, that it's seen as a third world, either in this country, I mean the rest of the people, and people know that in this country poor people get it, or that it's poor people mainly around the world, and people see it sort of like starvation. It's something that the poor in the rest of the world, third world, frequently suffer from, a lot of problems. Or do you see other problems relating to why this isn't a crisis of national proportions as it should be?
Well, I think it certainly is a crisis of national proportion, but I think you're right that the perception that's put out is that it is a marginalized disease in that way. And I see a couple of reasons for it. I mean, certainly it has to do with the fact that AIDS is, in fact, a disease that is very closely related to poverty and to the marginalization of communities. And that means that those communities don't have as much political power to get the attention of the policymakers or to write the policy or put forward the funding. So, you know, I think it's not accidental that you have now an epidemic in the United States that really has a black face. AIDS is a disease that disproportionately affects African Americans in the United States. You know, at this point, I think we have 21,000 African Americans with AIDS every year who are diagnosed, every year. And I think the statistics, the latest that I saw coming out of Bangkok, were 185,000 that are living with AIDS. Now, you know, that's about, I think African Americans are 12% of the population in the United States, but they represent half of new AIDS diagnoses. And, you know, you have to look at that and say, well, why isn't this, you know, in the headlines every day? I think it's because African Americans don't have the political power in the United States that would be necessary for a George Bush to be getting up to the podium every day and saying, we need to talk about the crisis of access to treatment and health care for all the Americans with HIV. I mean, there are waiting lists in this country, and that's for people who, you know, don't have access to Medicare. And if you have access to Medicare, you're even in a worse situation because of the cuts in Medicare. So I think that we need to look at it and talk about a global, you know, epidemic and include the United States in that definition, because the crisis in treatment is equally applicable here. We may not have the same statistics, but it's a big problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even in terms of testing, I mean, we haven't tested everybody for HIV in the United States, not by a long shot. Many millions of people around the world do not have HIV testing. In the United States, it's been 23 years, but it's still, I don't have the statistics in front of me for the United States, but we know that it's still quite the minority who have gotten access to HIV testing, who have taken up challenge of HIV testing. So, again, you know, I think that this is an issue that has to do with the political power of groups and communities. And I think the other issue that you bring up in terms of it being perceived as a gay disease and in some cases as a white disease initially was because gay white men were the ones who were spotlighted by the media, even though, of course, many gay men and bisexual men of color were also, you know, exposed and affected and died in the early years of the epidemic. Now that it's really become an epidemic that is more disproportionately affecting people of color and increasingly women, you're getting less attention. There's a saturation of media, and also a lot of those people died initially, so you have that, and you also have the fact that there's been an institutional response, so people tend to think like, oh, well, all these organizations exist, and so the problem must be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
This is the problem.
And Christine Dedeschi, isn't there also sort of a wages of sin or death aspect of this? In other words, many people see this as a disease people bring on themselves. In other words, if they have unprotected sex, if they share needles, if that this is behavior. This is not like influenza or bubonic plague or typhoid, but this is rather as a result of intemperate behavior, so that there's a lack of sympathy with people that contract it.
I think so. I think that that is something that isn't, it's not a passive message. There's a reason why people have that message, and I think that's because a lot of the issue, the core issue that's underneath AIDS is sexuality. And that's a subject that is really still one that America struggles with. I'd say America in the broadest sense. We don't have a very frank discourse about sexuality in schools. We now have a president who represents a very sort of born-again, Christian, fundamentalist view of religion, and, you know, the primary message that his administration has been putting out has been abstinence, it has been fidelity, doesn't want to consider that. The reality is that many young teenage boys and girls are engaging in sex at an early age, do need sex education, should be provided with condoms, should be provided with birth control. And I think that that is really a reason why we have this response. I mean, it's not George Bush who created the response to AIDS in America, but right now the administration is having a tremendously chilling impact on innovative prevention programs. I mean, there's tremendous cutbacks. There's been a flatlining of prevention dollars. There have been withdrawal and threats of withdrawal of funding from the programs that are actually targeting, for example, gay and bisexual men in some of the, you know, frontline cities like San Francisco and others. You know, around the world, the Bush administration has basically been just basically promoting abstinence as part of its global AIDS program. The majority of the prevention dollars that are being put forward under the administration's bill are for abstinence. I think it's, at this point, the official numbers are 33%, but people who look at it are saying that it's somewhere almost up to 60%. And it's really abstinence. Well, you know, the people who are suffering and really on the front lines in Africa are increasingly married women, young women in many cases, who in some cases are abstinent, and then when they get married, of course, they're with their husbands trying to have children and are exposed by their husbands because their husbands haven't had access to HIV testing because there isn't enough education that's been done. And so what we're seeing is, regardless of what your moral position is on abstinence and whether you would like your children to abstain from sex as long as possible or whatever, this is a policy that's failing. And with it is a withdrawal of condoms. I mean, the Bush administration is saying that it is wanting to push abstinence and condoms as an absolute last resort. They may say something sometimes differently on paper, but actually they've been pretty open about it. So the result is that in countries like Botswana, where you have 40% of adults who are HIV positive, you know, you're withdrawing condoms. You're not funding groups that could put out the only way to protect women and young girls. And I think in my book, you know, I started getting so outraged at this that, you know, when you really look at it, the message is we're going to let Africans die if they won't abstain.
Hmm. And Christine Tedeschi is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. The book she's talking about is the one that's just been published by Verso, Moving Mountains, The Race to Treat Global AIDS. And Christine, you've been all over the world doing AIDS reporting, and you're most recently in Bangkok in the middle of July for the 15th International AIDS Conference. Do those conferences do any good?
I think they do two things. I think the biggest good they do is they raise, at least for a moment, global awareness and a lot of media attention, and they provide this kind of annual measuring stick for the progress we make in the broadest terms. And I think that they do allow for those people who can afford thousands of dollars to get into a conference an opportunity to come together, compare notes, highlight what's working, share models. That's very, very important. I think with this conference, there was really a problem in that the Bush administration, because it was in some ways punishing the global community for the last conference, where the last conference, the U.S. Representative Tommy Thompson, Health and Human Services Secretary, was booed off the stage by activists who were complaining about the U.S. agenda. And therefore, in response, the U.S. withdrew a lot of its support for the conference. It demanded, for example, that more abstinence be programs be highlighted, and it tried to force the conference to sign, you know, get participants to sign a waiver saying they wouldn't have any protests at all or they would be ejected. In other words, essentially, you know, kind of tampering with our right to speech clause that we supposedly support in this country. And it also refused to send many, many American scientists. So it was a very, very small and reduced contingent from the United States. And, you know, that really sends a signal that unless it's going to go the way that the U.S. and specifically the Bush administration wants it, we're not going to support it. And I think that in some ways is the overall global AIDS message. I mean, the Bush administration, to its credit, is giving money, but that money is with strings attached.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just on the prevention side. On the treatment side, they have actively blocked access to generic drugs for the poorest countries.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about as well, like some of the people involved in the Bush administration, like Abner Mason, who is the administration's presidential, he's a member of the Presidential Advisory Committee on HIV and AIDS, and he's chair of its international subcommittee. But then he's also president of this drug industry-funded front group called the AIDS Responsibility Project, where it appears as he's like the only member And that he was there lobbying against the use of cheap generic drugs. And there was even an ad that was taken out in the Bangkok Post attacking generic drugs.
Right. You know, this should not be news. I mean, what, you know, when I really tried to talk about it in the book, and you mentioned that I did work on a movie, which I'll give people the information about it, because I think it's just a companion kind of piece or companion narrative. The film itself is called Pills, Profits, and Protest, and it's the voices of global AIDS activists. And what it covers is really this whole movement to try to get access to affordable treatment. The bottom line in all this AIDS, you know, issue is that the drug company, the big pharma companies, the six or eight companies that produce HIV drugs, actually they market the drugs. They didn't necessarily develop the drugs themselves, but they market them. They sell them. They've been actively opposed to any kind of production of generic drugs, even for sale in countries where they themselves are not particularly interested in trying to sell their drugs. I mean, Africa, for example, only is equivalent to 1% of the global drug market. And they were basically writing off Africa and Asia. They weren't making their drugs available. It was only when activists began to demand them. But the issue is that they're really afraid that Americans and Europeans are going to find out how cheap it is to make drugs. I mean, you know, it now costs 38 cents a day for a generic pill, a three-in-one, three drugs in one generic pill for the poorest countries. These are drugs produced in India and a couple of other countries now, and that's the cheapest they've been able to make their drugs. Well,
let me interrupt you just 1 second, yeah. and because the drug companies say, well, yeah, that's what it costs now, but that doesn't take into account the tens of millions of dollars, maybe even hundreds of millions of dollars spent in research, and that ignores that.
Yeah. And I think that it's really important to look at that and say, where's the truth in that? I think the truth with the AIDS drugs is that the majority of the AIDS drugs were actually created by academic scientists and university scientists. They sold their inventions to the big drug companies who then market them. And so this idea that the drug companies themselves research and develop those drugs, first of all, is false. They do develop some, but they didn't happen in most cases to develop the AIDS drugs. And on top of that, what you have is a situation where statistically what they do is they end up, how would you explain this? They end up calculating what they might have, they factor in lost profits. In other words, what they might have made while their investments are tied up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So I cited one study that was done, just a small study.
There's a word for it, too, like parked profits or something.
Parked
like that.
Profits.
Stranded.
Yes.
Stranded profits, I think it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there was this article that I cited that was done by a colleague of mine named Bob Huff. He writes for a treatment newsletter of the Gay Men's Health Crisis, and he put it out in July and August of 2001. And he was talking about looking at drug development, and he said, you know, it's true that drug development is risky and expensive, and there are a lot of drug failures for every wonder drug. But the companies also get tax credits. They get benefit for what, for now, this very accelerated approval of their drugs by the Food and Drug Administration, which all of which spelled savings, which is what he found. And then on top of it, they have this monopoly of 20 years on their products, which is something that's supported by the World Trade Health Organization rules. And, you know, he looked at this industry claim. The industry often claims that it spends $179 million to bring a typical drug to the market. And he found that it actually cost about $65 million, and that was according to figures that were put together by a Ralph Nader consumer group called Public Citizen. And, again, this is because of what you're calling the parked profits or lost profits. So he gave one example for 2001 with Bristol-Myers, which, as you know, makes some AIDS drugs. They spent $1.9 billion. That was about 10% of their total drug revenue on research and development. But they spent three times that, which was $5.6 billion on marketing and administration.
Oh,
all right. And at the same time, that year, the big drug companies enjoyed profits that were twice that of Microsoft. I mean, just to compare it to a company that we know spends about, you know, 40% of its revenues on research and development and marketing administration.
Let's do this before I just I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we have about a minute and a half, and we said there was some good news. Let's leave people with that, and then we'll tell them the rest of the stories in your book.
Well, I'd say the good news is that treatment is possible in the poor settings. That's my message, and that we found that it's very, very cost-effective. When you bring in treatment, you have to provide testing, right, which is the first step of prevention. So it beefs up prevention. And when you put people on treatment, they start to spread the good news, and that really counters the stigma. So that I think when you look at 46 million or when you call 50 million or 42 million, I prefer to think of it as 46 million people who represent a potential army. You know, we have a huge human resource to fight this global epidemic. We need to provide them with low-cost drugs. They come back very quickly. I mean, 2-3 weeks, and if somebody who's very ill is back in good health, on the way to recovery, and begins to not only spread messages around safe sex, but the message that we can beat this epidemic. We have to invest it, and we need some political solutions. We need to make some noise at the next elections and make sure that whoever wins, that the policies that they put forward are really going to, you know, deal with this crisis and not increase the crisis.
Well, I'd like to leave it on a note of optimism, but even your title, Moving Mountains, it seems like we would have to move mountains in order to save people that could be saved.
You know, I think that it's, I want to say that it's a question of political will. We don't have the political will we need, but we do have the capacity to do it, and we certainly have the money so many times over. So we need to get the message that it doesn't cost very much, it costs far less, and the ultimate message is, if we don't act now, it's going to be that much worse. That much worse. Triple, you know, it just logarithmically is going to grow. And if we don't deal with what happens in Africa and Asia and Europe, it is going to impact on us here that much more in the future. It's one epidemic. We easily have the means to address it. And doing that, we're going to address other problems as well. It's ultimately going to help us all. So we have to get that message and make people realize that even as individuals, they can have a tremendous impact.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't remember the last time I felt an interview only scratched the surface. There's so much here. It's in the book, Moving Mountains, The Race to Treat Global AIDS. It's published by Verso. My guest has been Anne-Christine Dedeschi. Thank you so much for having joined us.
I appreciate it.
You're listening to WRIF.com. Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist, whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss.
Hey, it's Mike Walters from The Morning Show, and I'm as excited as you are that summer is officially here. Summer, of course, means hot weather, but extreme temperatures can really affect your car's transmission, and you certainly don't need a breakdown in the middle of a summer road trip or when you're rolling around town with your buds. So if you're hearing any grinding, feeling slipping, seeing fluid, or think you might have a transmission problem, visit one of AAMCO's 4 locations in the Detroit area. Call 1-800-GO-AAMCO, that's AAMCO, for the center nearest you. Tell them I sent you for a free diagnostic check at participating centers. Just call for an appointment. AAMCO technicians are the best in the field. They're trained and certified in advanced transmission diagnosis, repair, and maintenance. So taking your car to AAMCO is like having vacation insurance. And with the skyrocketing gas prices, a better running car means better gas mileage. For a job done right, guaranteed, at a price that's right, AAMCO, AAMCO.
Do you have what it takes to be the elite of the elite? Immerse yourself in a competitive army tournament with America's Army Special Forces, the only video game developed by the world's premier land force, the United States Army. From the barracks to the battlefield, it's the most authentic military game you'll ever play. Team-based missions include combat search and rescue, direct action, surveillance and reconnaissance, and unconventional warfare. Think you've got what it takes? Visit www.americasarmy.com and try your skills. What is the U.S. Army? It is having the individual strength and the support of an unstoppable team. Being a soldier also means upholding the ideals set forth in the U.S. Constitution and becoming a respected part of your community. Become stronger, smarter, and better prepared for challenges through training, technology, and support. To learn more about the many different opportunities available in the U.S. Army, visit GoArmy.com or call 1-800-USA-ARMY today. This is WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
What the hell does Detroit want with Arkansas?
Well, you know, just same old thing. Just shoot the breeze, you know.
Damn, I ain't got time to mess you damn people up there. I got work to do here, and you keep calling, raising hell with me. What's the matter? Every week or...
Well, you become an important part of the program, Delbert. It's actually should be a compliment.
Yeah.
What the hell does Michigan want with Arkansas?
I guess this is the first time we've run into you in a bad mood.
Well, you know, I guess everybody gets that once in a while after so much irritation.
Yeah.
Did something happen the last time we talked?
No, I don't reckon. This is the way it has to be, I guess. Let me tell you one thing before you hang up.
All right.
This is an April Fool's joke on you bastards.
You crotchety old curmudgeon.
Thank you very much for joining me. One of the things that almost everybody has gotten used to, accustomed to, is immediate news, immediate analysis. And obviously doing a weekly broadcast like I do, I can't always do that. In fact, sometimes you miss things by a week. But it does have some advantage in that you get some perspective. You can step back and see after all the commotion and all the immediate response is over, get a longer view and even get a look at how we initially responded. That's certainly true with a lot of things. In this particular case, I'm talking about the Congressional 911 report that came out Saturday, July 24th. Joining me is Marjorie Cohn. You may remember she was with us just a few weeks ago. She's a professor of law at Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego, and also a contributing editor to Truthout. That's truthout.org. It's on my website. You may be familiar with that. And Marjorie Cohn, welcome back to the Peter Werbe Show.
My pleasure, Peter.
And I'm correct as well. You're the vice president of the National Lawyers Guild?
That's also correct.
Of the National Lawyers Guild?
Yes, National Lawyers
Guild. Okay, good. So we have a lot of perspectives here that you can speak from. Now that there's been a week or week and a half or so has gone by, has anything changed about how you view this report than you did immediately? Because I see in Truthout you wrote almost that same day a perspective.
No, actually, my perspective had been, it's based on an analysis that I had developed over several months, and when the report was finally released, it didn't change my basic perspective, which is that in order to really get at why we were attacked on 9/11, you have to analyze the war in Iraq and exactly what effect it's had. Has it made us safer the way Dick Cheney and George W. Bush claim, or has it made us less safe? And the problem I saw with the 9/11 report was that it completely avoided any analysis of whether the Iraq War has made us safer. In fact, interestingly, when Wolf Blitzer on CNN's Late Edition Sunday asked the vice chair of the 9/11 Commission, Lee Hamilton, about why the commission didn't venture any opinion regarding Iraq, and Blitzer suggested, quote, don't go to war with countries that had nothing to do with 9/11, unquote, Hamilton, who was caught off balance, said that dealing with Iraq in this 9/11 report, quote, would have been highly divisive, unquote, and that the commission members would not have been able to agree on a recommendation. And then he quickly recovered, and he gave the official answer, which was that discussing Iraq would have been well beyond any reasonable interpretation of what we were supposed to do. So they really avoided the elephant in the room, if you will, and that is Iraq. Mm-hmm. Bush is running for re-election based upon having made the country safer, and Cheney is now talking about, you know, while Bush is in Crawford, Texas, Cheney is going around the country saying that Iraq was a gathering threat and we're safer now. That doesn't square with with my understanding, which is that we are actually less safe now because first of all, aside from the deaths of almost 1,000 of our own soldiers, tens of thousands of Iraqis have been killed, and the people in the Arab and Muslim world who watch in graphic detail on Al Jazeera and other media outlets the real ravages of the war, the broken bodies, the bleeding children with no limbs, we don't see that. And they see that, and that incenses them. People who might not have supported al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden before have been infuriated. And the fact that this war continues, that our not just our troops, but anyone from other countries are fair game for being killed or shot at or kidnapped or beheaded, it looks to me like that we have become really less safe as a result of the Iraq War. And I think to the extent that this 9/11 report goes through nicely 567 pages of a lot of very interesting information about what they've pieced together, and they come up with some bureaucratic recommendations to reorganize the government, just really misses the point mm-hmm. of why we were attacked in the first place, and it has to do with our foreign policy.
Well, Marjorie Cohn, I was the day that it came out, I looked at a rather worthless rag that appears daily in this city called the Detroit News, and their headline said, "We are not safe." And I said, whoa, that's not exactly what the Bush administration wanted to hear. But you quote in your article, the 911 report misses the point that was published at truthout.org, that the commissioners wrote, "We believe we are safer today because of offensive actions against al-Qaeda since 911, but we are not safe." So always this language, I tend to agree with you. I think we've put ourselves more in jeopardy, but the commission concluded the opposite.
Well, I don't know that the commission concluded the opposite. The commission talked about a blinking red light that this could happen any time, it's interesting to put it into perspective, to recall that Bush resisted vehemently the establishment of this 9/11 commission. He did not want it at all, and it was only from intense pressure by the families of the 9/11 victims, the New Jersey girls, that forced him to accept this 9/11 commission. Well, now that the report's come out and it doesn't really point a finger at Bush, it kind of points it all around, Bush is embracing the report and saying it's constructive, even though he hasn't read much of it. Evidently, he took it with him to Crawford, Texas. And so what's happening is that we see the Democrats taking center stage in Boston now at their convention, and traditionally presidents during the convention of the opposing party will kind of stay out of sight. That doesn't prevent Cheney from going around politicking, but Bush is in Crawford, Texas. But what's happened is that he is taking advantage of the fact that this 9/11 Commission report made several recommendations, mostly structural bureaucratic recommendations, to have a Condoleezza Rice fly to Crawford and go through the report and quickly issue executive orders, which I think we'll see in the next couple of days, instituting some of the changes recommended mm-hmm. by the report so that he can then say, look what I'm doing to fight terror.
Now, if both administrations, the current one and the one previous, shared responsibility for what happened on September 11th, the death of 3,000 people, history could, under this view of things, judge the Clinton administration harshly, but we have a president in office at the time that was also said by the commission to have had very little appreciation of the threat, less so than the Clinton administration. So this seems to me, in many ways, even though this was the commission itself was handpicked by Bush, to be I think more damning than you're saying.
Well, you know, the thing that we can't get around, you know, the polls show that people, at least if you can believe the polls, they come out daily and keep changing, but that Bush is ahead of Kerry in terms of the war on terror and whether people think that he can keep us safe. The thing that people forget is that 9/11 happened on Bush's watch. He had been president for 8 months. And if we do have another terrorist attack, heaven forbid, before the election, that will also be on Bush's watch, and which should make people ask whether or not we really are safer under George W. Bush. I don't think we are. I mean, we have the terror alert going up and down all the time. They're frightening the heck out of us all the time. The lights blinking red. It just does not seem that we are all that safe under the current commander-in-chief.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Marjorie Cohn. She's a law professor at Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego, vice president of the National Lawyers Guild. You're listening to the Peter Werbe Show. Last time we spoke, I may even have made this point. You tell me. I said that if Gore had been seated as president, which I think would have been proper, I'm sure the Republicans would have led a drive to impeach him. And I don't know that I would have been making much of a fuss about it. In other words, if I would have thought that the president of the United States, and if Al Gore, say, would have dropped the ball on intelligence and protection of the country so badly that 9/11 occurred, I would have said, well, I don't even know what the defense is. This is such misfeasance in office.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point you raise. I mean, we don't know what Al Gore would have done. We don't. I can't imagine that Al Gore would have invaded Iraq the way Bush did.
No, not at all.
Neoconservatives tried to convince Clinton to do the same, to go in after Saddam Hussein, and he refused. And it was only because of the confluence of a number of factors, including, in my opinion, Bush's personal vendetta against Saddam Hussein and wanting to show that he could do what his father didn't, that he agreed to the neoconservative agenda, which is to go in after Iraq when Iraq posed no threat at all to the United States, and not just to go in, but to go in under false pretenses, to mislead us about, and the Congress as well, about the danger that Saddam Hussein posed. He obviously posed no danger at all to us. And so I think it's important when we're talking about supporting our soldiers over there to realize that almost 1,000 of them have been killed for nothing, for no good reason, for lies, and that the most important thing is to get them back here so they don't continue to be killed.
Mm-hmm. Now, you, and I think this is very important, have been concentrating a lot in our talk here about what happened after September 11th, the invasion of Iraq, but the reasons, that, and you said that that was never addressed, the reasons before the Iraq War even started, why these men took it upon themselves to commit this heinous attack on the United States. And maybe that's worth attacking, because Bush always says, you know, they hate democracy, they hate our values. And it's actually, I think the commission itself said a lot of it had to do with our Middle East policy.
Well, you know, that's true. There is one line in the 9/11 report, and it says, quote, this is right out of the report, right or wrong, it is simply a fact that American policy regarding the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and American actions in Iraq are dominant staples of popular commentary across the Arab and Muslim world, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
No analysis of whether it's right or wrong, what the content of that is. That obviously was a compromise on the part of this bipartisan commission. But interestingly, there's a book that's going to come out called Imperial Hubris, Why the West is Losing the War on Terror. And it's written by a person that's anonymous, although the Boston Phoenix identified him as Michael Schuer, a 23-year veteran of the CIA, and also evidently was the CIA officer formerly charged with analyzing Osama bin Laden. And he says in this book that, quote, Iraq was a gift of epic proportions to Osama bin Laden and those who think like him. And he says that al-Qaeda itself has said that it could not wish for a better government than the one that is now governing the U.S. because on the policies of the issue to Muslims, al-Qaeda believes that this government, the Bush government, is wrong on every one and thus allows their insurgency to grow larger. This is in an interview with the American Conservative. But in that vein, Ernest Hollings, who's a senator from South Carolina, wrote an article earlier this month in the Charleston Post and Courier, and he talks about what the 9/11 report does not talk about, and that is, quote, I'm quoting now Senator Hollings, Osama bin Laden hit us because of our president's presence in Saudi Arabia and policy in Israel-Palestine. And he says, quote, imagine 37 years occupation of Palestine. Palestine is left hopeless and embittered, but embittered refugees from without lead with terrorism. It cannot be, he talks about the Palestinian state, which cannot be built while homes are bulldozed, settlements extended, and walls are constructed. And Robert Reich, who was a professor at Brandeis University, and he was Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration, says that we must restart the Middle East peace process, which he says Bush has run away from. So, you know, in my opinion, if you, you know, what I see from my research is that many people in the Arab and Muslim world see the United States policies as terrorist. And this goes back to the 90s when 1 million innocent Iraqis were killed as a result of Western sanctions in Iraq. Remember the famous Madeleine Albright quote, saying, well, we think the price is worth it. And then they see what's happening now in Iraq and the photographs and the accounts of the torture coming out of the prisons in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo Bay. But what is not focused on in the report is the United States uncritical policy toward Israel and also our presence in Saudi Arabia where we had bases. Now, interestingly, there have been, let's see, and I'm losing it right now, but there were, here, I've got it. It's here in this, from the American Conservative magazine, and it's an interview with this CIA agent who wrote the book, this former CIA agent who was in the CIA for 23 years. He says that bin Laden has identified six specific U.S. policies that appeal to the anger of Muslims. And they are our unqualified support for Israel, our ability to keep oil prices within a tolerable range for consumers, our support for people who oppress Muslims, that is Russia in Chechnya, India in Kashmir, and China in Western China, our presence on the Arabian Peninsula, our military presence in Iraq and Afghanistan, and our support for Muslim tyrannies from the Atlantic to the Indian Ocean. All of this has to do with U.S. foreign policy. So I think that whether we like it or not, we need to analyze why is there this tremendous anger that's growing and mushrooming against the United States sufficient to drive people to get on airplanes and commit suicide and kill innocent people. And until we do that, we can restructure and reorganize and revamp our institutions, but we're not going to stop terrorism.
Professor Cohn, the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks upon the United States, which we know as the 911 Commission, did it take up some of the issues that you'll see on hundreds of sites devoted to trying to get to the bottom of 911? For instance, I was thinking, you know, that there must have been a military order for the planes for the U.S. military planes to stand down and not attack the second and the third planes. Did the commission take that up at all?
They did talk about that. They did talk about the military order. They talked about all of the facts leading up to it. In fact, it reads kind of like a chilling novel. It's very dramatic. If you read the facts, it's frightening. They did talk about that. And, the other thing to keep in mind, and we're talking about, whether the country is safer under Bush or whether it would be safer under Kerry, and that's really kind of the heart, it goes to the heart of the presidential campaign. People who have seen Michael Moore's movie, Fahrenheit 9/11, perhaps the most poignant part of that movie, whether you agree with what he says or not, is the camera that was trained upon Bush, who was reading to the kindergarten class in Florida when the 9/11 attacks took place, and he sat there for 7 minutes after he was told that the second plane had hit. Didn't move. He was frozen. and it's really unbelievable that a commander-in-chief would sit there and do nothing. He was waiting for someone to tell him what to do. Well, Teresa Hines Carey was interviewed, I believe it was on Larry King Live. It was on one of the, it was an interview show last week. And she never came out and criticized Bush. And in fact, when she was asked about how, she was asked, how would John Kerry, how would your husband have reacted differently? And she took great pains to say that she doesn't blame George W. Bush. It must have been a very difficult situation. He wasn't in Washington. He didn't want to scare the children. I mean, she was very charitable to him, I thought. But she said something that I thought was very, very important, and that was that her husband is the kind of person, and of course, you know, he exhibited great heroism and bravery in Vietnam, which, you know, just can't get around. But he's the kind of person that would have immediately gone to the scene. She said he would have wanted to be with his men. He would have wanted to protect them. And that instinct, regardless of what the Republicans say and try to minimize it, that instinct, I think, if nothing else, should give people pause about whether or not they would be safer under a president who sits there for 7 minutes and does nothing after his country is attacked versus John Kerry, who, you know, not only pulled people out of the water, turned back around and during enemy fire and pulled people out of the water from other boats and saved their lives, but actually, while he was being fired at, ran his boat onto the shore and actually chased them down and shot them. I mean, the bravery is just phenomenal.
Well,
and I think that we just have to keep that in mind.
The implication, though, that there was a military order for the plane to stand down suggests a great conspiracy that the Bush administration, in fact, wanted to allow this to occur, and that a military attack on the plane's heading for the World Trade Center and for Washington had to be allowed to take their target out. So I assume that the commission did not say yes, there was a military order. I'm sure they said that there wasn't. What was the explanation for the fact that it took so long for the planes to get in the air? And in fact, when they got in the air, they were ones without any weapons.
Right. I believe that military order was given by Dick Cheney because he was in charge. He was actually in the White House at the time. But I have to confess I did not read that part of it carefully. So I have to go
All right.
back
well,
and
there's
check.
Also, some of this, there's that fact that people made a small fortune shorting airline and insurance stocks before September 11th, that the trading ratio on United Airlines was 25 times greater than normal at the Pacific Exchange, where traders could buy what they call puts, which are high-risk bets that the price of a company's stock will fall sharply. The next day, United Airlines jetliners crashed and shares plummeted. I wonder if they took up stuff like that. And you know, other people say it was not an airliner that flew into the Pentagon. And there's lots of charges of that. In that regard, that most people dismiss as pure conspiracy theory.
Yeah, I have not heard that they go into a conspiracy theory. And I'm going to after we get off the phone, go and read that part about the shooting down. I was looking more for a political analysis when I was reading it, and also read extensively about the background of the hijackers, where they came from. You know, one of the things that's interesting about it is that a good deal of the information that they have in that report comes from the interrogations of Al-Qaeda people, and of course these interrogations are done under great duress and in fact with the use of torture. So it's not really clear that all of the information that they got from these people being interrogated is accurate.
Did they ever come to the conclusion that actually the 19 people that they identified as the hijackers were in fact the ones that did it? I mean, there are some people that have popped up and said, hey, that wasn't me. I'm here living in Yemen. I think there was one case, but
well, I think my understanding is that they identified the 19 people who have been identified in the press.
Mm-hmm.
most of whom came from Saudi Arabia. The other interesting thing is that they really glossed over any responsibility that Saudi Arabia might have for even financing these attacks, whereas you'll recall the bipartisan congressional commission that issued the, it was either 300 or 500-page report several months ago, the White House insisted on redacting out or editing out 28 pages, which were not declassified, and those 28 pages were evidently about Saudi Arabia. So I wonder why they've smoothed over any complicity with Saudi Arabia. I mean, they make a big thing about Iran, although they say that even though hijackers pass through Iran easily without their passports stamped in the months before 9/11, they could find no direct link between the Iranian government knowing anything about the September 11th attacks. Well, many of the hijackers passed through Malaysia and Germany and Saudi Arabia and many other countries as well, and they were not singled out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a bit alarmed at Bush's response, saying, well, you know, even though the commission and the CIA as well says that there is no connection between the Iranian government and 9/11, that we're going to look and see if there is a connection. I think that he has other motives for wanting to go after Iran, whom he's put in the axis of evil. But it's also important to note that one of the most significant things that the 9/11 Commission said in this report is that they have found no evidence linking Iraq, the government of Iraq, with 9/11. And yet, the Bush administration continues to say that there is such a link. And so that should also give us pause.
I think we have to take a major pause right here. I don't think this issue has yet been put to rest. But Marjorie Cohn, I want to thank you so much for joining us as usual. Marjorie Cohn is professor of law at Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego. If you want to look on my site, you can see more 911 links. There's one, 911truth.org. Marjorie Cohn, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you, Peter.
Hey, it's Mike Walters from The Morning Show, and I'm as excited as you are that summer is officially here. Summer, of course, means hot weather, but extreme temperatures can really affect your car's transmission, and you certainly don't need a breakdown in the middle of a summer road trip or when you're rolling around town with your buds. So if you're hearing any grinding, feeling slipping, seeing fluid, or think you might have a transmission problem, visit one of AAMCO's four locations in the Detroit area. Call 1-800-GO-AAMCO, that's AAMCO, for the center nearest you. Tell them I sent you for a free diagnostic check at participating centers. Just call for an appointment. AAMCO technicians are the best in the field. They're trained and certified in advanced transmission diagnosis, repair, and maintenance. So taking your car to AAMCO is like having vacation insurance. And with the skyrocketing gas prices, a better running car means better gas mileage. For a job done right, guaranteed, at a price that's right, AAMCO, AAMCO.
Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist. Whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Do you have what it takes to be the elite of the elite? Immerse yourself in a competitive army tournament with America's Army Special Forces, the only video game developed by the world's premier land force, the United States Army. From the barracks to the battlefield, it's the most authentic military game you'll ever play. Team-based missions include combat search and rescue, direct action, surveillance and reconnaissance, and unconventional warfare. Think you've got what it takes? Visit www.americanarmy.com.